Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Game Junk Podcast for October 2018. This is episode number 37, and my name is Sean.
My name is Frank.
And my name is Andrew.
Coming up on this month's episode, we're going to be getting to a couple of reviews. We're going to be talking about Guacamelee 2, as well as Sony's Spider-Man.
Sean, it's Marvel's Spider-Man.
Marvel's Spider-Man
is the official title.
And we've got some discussion surrounding Telltale Games and that whole fiasco, and a bunch of stuff we played and some of your junk mail as well. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for downloading. It's actually hasn't been that long, has it?
I don't know.
It's been like what, a couple months?
Yeah, a couple months. So we're on pace for our four a year.
Yeah, that's true. But, so we should say right up front, we were hoping to have Graham from Drinkbox join us. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to make it. He had, he was on a trip. He was in Europe, had some mishaps on that trip. I don't know if, you know, maybe when he does come on the show, he'll be able to fill us in on that. But,
yeah, we're hoping to still have him on, hopefully in a couple months, whenever the next time we record.
When Guacamelee 3 comes out.
Yeah, well, they did just announce Guacamelee 2 coming to Switch in December, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's an official launch date or not.
Okay.
I don't believe that's public information.
Well, maybe I didn't say anything. but yeah, so that'll be something to look forward to as well. But, and I actually know like a lot of people who really wanted to play Guacamelee 2 on the Switch. Like, it just seems like a game that, I don't know, for whatever reason, people wanted to be able to play it on the go, and...
Can I just say I hate that?
Do you?
Like this, it's so much, but this game was made for the Switch. What does that even mean? It's a screen. How is it playing it in your hands on a smaller screen made to be played on anything? It's ridiculous.
Well, maybe people like portable. Like it on the go.
It's basically, the only equivalent is... Unfriended is made to be watched on a laptop. That makes sense. A game being made to be played on Switch, it's just a screen in your hands. What is the difference?
I don't know. Like, a lot of people,
that's my new number one pet peeve in video games.
I think what it is that I think a lot of people, like, the Switch is becoming the indie go-to platform of choice. And, you know, for me, it kind of makes a certain amount of sense.
That makes me even more angry.
When you sit down and you want to play, like, the latest AAA game, blow out your speakers, that's something you're going to sit down and play on your big screen TV, home theater system. When you're playing a smaller game that's, you know, maybe not quite, a massive audio-visual experience, then it can be on a you know, portable system or something smaller like the Switch.
Well, that, like I said, angers me even more because Nintendo had closed the door to indies for forever. It was impossible to make your games on their console. Now they let them in for like the first time with open arms, and they're the indie console. Every other console embraced indies earlier. If you're into indies, Nintendo is the last place you should buy them from because they were the last place to give them a home. Fuck them.
Drop that mic.
Well, harsh words out of the gate from Frank, but
fucking Nintendo fanboys,
good start so far.
It's out of control.
I think Nintendo realizes that they don't have a lot of first party stuff right now, and
yeah, they do. It just all came out on the Wii U.
Well, yeah.
The indie stuff
is saving them right now.
I think those technical problems getting connected tonight have got me fired up. I'm ready to go.
Another classic Game Junk technical issues.
Nintendo indie bomb, and that just was the catalyst. I am ready to rock.
Fired up. Okay, we'll get into some stuff in just a second. You know, if you are tuning in for the first time, or if you haven't heard this stuff before, but you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/gamejunk, at Game Junk Podcast. We do post occasional news stories and things of that nature. And I guess we also have a Discord.
Yep, that's right. That's posted on the Facebook. It's pinned to the top.
Right. So you can join in discussions there. And then you can also...
email.
Follow us on Twitch and YouTube, I guess.
Yes, though I haven't done anything there. Works. Yeah, in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. So, and yeah, you can always email us, gamejunkpodcast@gmail.com, if you have questions, comments, and we may respond in 6 months' time, if you're lucky. So, okay, before we get into the reviews, let's start with this big news story, which kind of will become a hot button topic,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if we fully discussed the idea of unionizing the game industry.
I don't think we did, but it was quite a hot button from what I understand at GDC this year, the Game Developers Conference, which took place in March.
Right.
And I think we've done a show since March, and I don't recall talking about it. So, oh yeah, we must have done, because we did E3 and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we may have touched on it briefly, but well, let's talk about Telltale Games and that whole thing first, which, you know, so I think it was last month they announced that they're laying off the vast majority of their staff, and they're keeping a skeleton crew, quote unquote, on board for what was the game they were trying to finish?
Minecraft, I think.
Is that what it was? I think you're right. But obviously, they had lots of other games they were working on, and the big one people were concerned about was The Walking Dead, the third season of that, I guess. And so a lot of people were upset that that wasn't going to be completed. And we should note, you know, with these layoffs, there was no severance. People had benefits until the end of the month, which was like 9 days or something.
Yeah, there
like
was
that.
No notice.
Are we positive there was no severance? Like, I've been in severance situations, and sometimes it takes a while before you get it. Like, you don't get it necessarily the day you get laid off.
Yeah, that's true. As far as I know, all the places that have been reporting this have been reporting that there is no severance, and that employees were told up front, sorry, you're not getting any severance.
Okay, all right.
And, you know, part of that comes from, you know, I guess waiting to the last minute, basically, like feeling like your business is treading water and just trying to stay alive. And if you can just get one more contract or one more deal, you'll bring it back and everything will be fine. But when you keep pushing it right to the edge and nothing comes through, then all of a sudden you've gambled away everybody's benefits and safety nets for when they're no longer employed.
Yeah, it seems like that's exactly what they did, because from, I think there was maybe Kotaku or something was reporting that there was actually like publishers coming through the studio like the day before they laid everyone off. So obviously they're still trying to get money, but I mean, if you're that tight on cash, that literally it's like we need to sign a deal today to make sure we can keep going. That's pretty bad mismanagement in my eyes of that company. But
yeah, I think I read that they had money they thought that was going to come through from AMC. There was like two places that were going to invest in them or something like that, and AMC was one of them, obviously because of the partnership with The Walking Dead. But they had gotten a statement from AMC where they basically said, I mean, we were interested, but it was never like close to being a done deal. And they seemed to think it was a done deal. So, I mean, I don't know.
Nothing's done until it's signed. That's for sure.
Yeah. This happens a lot in the game industry, obviously. Like, it's not just the idea that a studio shuts down. I mean, I feel like there has been a lot of that in the past couple of years.
Well, and Capcom Vancouver got shut down like basically the same week as Telltale. So there's a prime example right there.
But it's interesting with Telltale, because when they started, it seemed like they had this model that was, you know, kind of an interesting way to combat where the game industry was at, because they were doing these chapter based games where it was kind of like, let's put out a piece of a game and then, you know, you'll get the full game over time and we can recoup some of the costs, and as opposed to, you know, taking 2 years to do a full game or whatever. And so it seemed like that was they had this interesting model that was helping them thrive in the marketplace now. But I guess that wasn't the case. And I have to admit, I mean, I don't remember the last, I think the last Telltale game I actually purchased was the first chapter of the Batman one. But I mean, there's so many games they were coming out with, and it was just hard to keep up with. And they were all kind of the same, to be honest with you.
Well, I think you hit on it right there. They were coming out with so many, it almost implied that they were doing well, because they had so many games coming out. You got to be thinking they're making some money on these. It's not just pure work for hire stuff, and at the end you have nothing. But maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was just almost pure work for hire, and maybe they were even, you know, going negative at the end when they had, because, well, you got to keep most of the team on, I imagine, for those type of games.
Yeah.
Well, there's another huge factor. I don't know how this plays into their deals or whatever, but almost every one of their games was popular because it served a license, except for maybe the Wolf Among Us. I'm not sure if that was previous material or based.
It was based on a comic book.
So even that, every one of those deals, there's, I think the reason that they're selling is because of the material they're based on. So I'm assuming there's a pretty big cut of sales that go to the licensee, or the licensor, pardon me, for a lot of that stuff. I mean, people were buying Walking Dead games because it was based on The Walking Dead. Even like Batman, Game of Thrones, Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm sure their profits were not as large as, say, something with, you know, if it was original content.
Yeah, did they ever have any original IPs? Like, I can't think of any.
I don't think so. Because they did, like, what about, no, because Wallace and Gromit or whatever, back in the day, right? When they first started doing this format, that's based off something, right? It's got to be.
Well, Wallace and Gromit is, like,
yeah. And they did Sam and Max. And then they did, like, Back to the Future, Jurassic Park. Yep. And then they came out with Walking Dead, I think, which was, like, where they started to take off.
Yeah. Like, at first, they were kind of like the resurrection of point-and-click adventure games, because they had a Monkey Island reboot as well. And then they kind of turned into, yeah, after The Walking Dead, it kind of became this sort of, you know, just narrative-based games. I don't know. I remember Jurassic Park, they tried to add some action elements, and it did not work so well. But yeah, I mean, maybe it was just stagnation, and people were, they were doing too much, and people were losing interest. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, it didn't seem like they invested much time in their tech, because it seemed like every game that came out was essentially the same. Just the content was different.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so I'm sure all that stuff didn't help. But yeah, I mean, so then obviously there's this whole issue of, it has sparked a lot of discussion about the current state of the game industry and being employed in the game industry. And I mean, it's been a problem for many years, but there has been some attempts to, you know, have employees stand up for their rights and to not have to work crazy unpaid overtime and all this kind of stuff. I don't know. Like, do you guys feel like there has been improvements in that stuff over the past decade, or is it kind of still exactly where it was, you know, when we started in the industry ourselves?
Yeah. So it's, since I like kind of branched out on my own, it's hard to tell, because obviously I'm working like a madman all the time that I have. But I think in general it's gotten better. And I think just with the rise of producers being more prevalent and people understanding that you need someone to manage, like a project manager type role, I think that's really helped everyone. I know at Drinkbox, they have those guys that basically do that. Like Graham basically does that, just project manages, and they are really good at, you know, cutting things. It's not going to fit into their time schedule. Now, obviously, like if you're making a huge AAA game, like I'm sure, I mean, Rockstar is pretty known for crunch.
Yeah, as far as I know, that is still the case there.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously you got to pick and choose what your examples are, but I mean, those games are so huge and so massive, and they take so long to make, that that amount of crunch does seem quite surprising. Though obviously it shows in the games that they put in tons and tons of hours into it. Now, is that Is that a managerial issue? I would say so.
Yeah, well, to me, they should be the ones with the least amount of crunch. They make the most money.
Yeah.
They have the biggest budgets. So, and their games make insane profits even after that. So why not inflate the budget to account for people not crunching? And they choose not to do that. So either it's a conscious choice or they've done it before and they found people just still don't work as hard. Like I remember times when we were crunching and people were playing video games on in certain places and just staying for free food. So just because people are crunching doesn't mean it's like everyone is like busting their ass to make sure everything's done. And sometimes part of crunching is just waiting for builds. You're not even working sometimes.
Yeah.
You're just waiting to test something so you can go home. So, I mean, crunch is a weird thing in general. I don't think it's getting better necessarily. And the main reason is, I would think, the demand for jobs in the industry from young people is so insane that if you're not willing to do it, there's definitely someone who will. And just the thrill of doing that job is enough. And so they'll sacrifice, you know, one experienced person for two up-and-comers who are willing to work all they can.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of a tangent, but there's like, I can't remember the name of it, but there's something where like the square root of the number of your employees account for like 90% of your work. So like basically there's like a small percentage of people that are on a project that actually produce the game. I may have those numbers slightly off, but
there's essentially a formula or something.
Yeah, there's some sort of formula I don't know how they proved it, but obviously it's a thing. And I mean, if you have that situation, like Frank was saying, you're obviously going to have people who are quote unquote crunching and literally producing like a very little amount towards the final product, which is going to just bloat everything.
Yeah. And well, I mean,
like, that's an issue.
There's all kinds of things you can get into. Like there's been studies done on productivity. You know, once you've worked a certain number of hours, your productivity goes way down. The number of mistakes you make go way up. And it's like, you know, it seems like you're making progress, but really you're not. You're just treading water. Kind
yeah, of, you're not playing. You're not working efficiently at all.
Yeah. So I mean, that's and it's just a given in the industry, and like not a lot of people want to challenge it. And I mean, I think that with better planning and stuff, I think you can ship a game, but like it's tough. Like I think the AAA games, especially like we've talked about, especially when you start bringing online play into it and stuff, like it's just so complex. And you can add more people to the team, but then that increases the complexity of managing that team, which again is like, is that helping? Like, like there's so many problems with it. So
yeah, you can't just throw people at the problem sometimes.
Yeah.
It's almost better, in my opinion, to have a smaller team and just extend out the project length. And although you won't ship products as fast, your budget would probably be about the same, but just spread out over a longer time. But obviously for these huge companies. And the other thing that I think the game industry, so back to kind of the union aspect, the game industry has these weird, like almost like ebbs and flows, probably similar to movies, where basically like you're deep in it and then you have this huge team, you ramp up to full production, and then you have nothing. So, I mean, to carry a team of any substantial size during a pre-production phase is just a huge waste of money from the company's point of view. And if you're burning that much money when you don't need to be, like a lot of people are just going to be sitting around doing nothing, or they're going to be working on stuff you're just going to throw away, which, I mean, we've all seen. For sure.
Yeah.
And so that's a big problem with the game industry. And that's why you see layoffs. You can't just have these huge teams hanging out unless you have two or three projects perfectly staggered where, you know, you're ramping down on a project. It has another team's ramping up on a different project. And you just happen to like move people over as they come off. But that's another managerial nightmare because games are never on time and the schedules are so long. And that's why, like, my personal feeling is that unions like at least large scale unions in the game industry are going to be really hard to pull off. Unless it's like a disciplinary thing where you almost have like a pool of programmers, a pool of 3D modelers, and you just kind of like pull them off the top as you need them. But then geography becomes a big issue. And, you know, people aren't just going to want to go wherever. I mean, at least in the movies, everything's pretty much in Hollywood or wherever, L.A., let's say. So well, you go to L.A. and you have opportunities not too far.
I mean, that has been changing a bit.
Well, the movie industry is different, too. Like, I don't know everything about it. So, but they have unions for certain things, but they still work contract to contract. Their union stuff only applies to their contract. So they're not like full-time employed. Once the gig's over, it's over. I think their union stuff applies just for that contract that they're on, if they're part of a union. So that's the thing we're talking about. Video games are eventually, I think, are already shifting to, you know, getting more contract-based stuff, specifically for artists, which sucks for them. And it's just going to keep shifting in that way. And then maybe, like, unions might come into play a bit more for people who are in a state where like they only get contract work, so their rights need to be up to a certain level while they're working those contracts, so people can't take advantage of them.
Yeah, so that sort of union I think makes sense in the game industry as well. But this sort of like GM or teachers union type union, or I think would never work in the game industry.
Yeah, I think any creative industry, it's tough to apply the idea of like what works for a factory job or something. Like it's just not, yeah, it's not as consistent, and there's just so many unknowns on any project. And the thing is, like with the movie industry, like the people work overtime, but they get paid for it, and they get paid very well. And it's, so, you know, people plan and they know, well, we got to stop production by this time or else we're paying through the nose for these people. And that idea does not exist in the game industry whatsoever. Like people just work insane hours. They don't get paid for any of those hours. Usually you might get time off in lieu or something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's just, and I think the other problem, and like this has been discussed a lot too, but there is sort of this, you know, like kind of like macho, like, hey, I can work these crazy hours and, you know, it doesn't affect me. I'm cool. And nobody wants to complain because, you know, you want to be a part of the team and you want to support everybody else. But like that just hurts everybody in the end. And it's not a good way to live. And ultimately, like people leave the industry and then your most experienced people leave and, you know, you lose that knowledge and that expertise. And it,
well, when I was doing it, I was the same way. I was like, I didn't like it, obviously, but I'm complicit. I'm doing it. If I really didn't want to do it, I should leave the job or say I'm not going to do it and get fired or whatever happens, happens. But until people are willing to like unite and say, okay, we're not working until we have a union, which let's not add the complexity of the American union versus Canadian unions. Video games are happening all over the place. Will companies shift production to different countries that do or don't have unions after that happens? Like the amount of solidarity it would take across the industry to make that happen seems almost impossible.
Yeah. And I think where I think it's different also is that for movies, it's kind of like you get a contract to do the movie, to do the whole movie. Whereas in games, the rug can be pulled out of you, out from under you, like basically on a monthly basis. If you don't meet your milestones, especially if you have a publisher, right? Like they'll just pull the plug. And I know when I was working crunch time, you basically are working not just because they tell you to, but because you know if you don't get your stuff down and it's a milestone requirement and you don't meet that deadline, they could pull the rug on everyone for that, you know, that's on that project. So if you're working on a 100, 200 person team and you decide to slack off because, you know, you're too good to get your work done or whatever, or maybe like that's another managerial issue though, obviously they overscheduled you, but you know, sometimes you get behind and sometimes you just need to push through and, you know, I don't know, I personally would feel somewhat responsible in that situation for not getting my stuff done and not hitting a deadline. Now, obviously, some publishers are probably a little more lenient than others, but you know that that possibility still does exist. And if you're on a union, I don't know, does that then make the milestone stuff more difficult to manage because now you have like these all these other things to deal with? I'm not saying it's not a good route to go down, but I think there could be added complexity you'll have to take into account when making your schedules up and everything, and it's just not going to be an easy thing to pull off for the game industry.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, there's what's the name of this organization that's is it like Game Devs Unite or something like that? They're the ones Sounds that were right. at GDC, I think. Game Devs United? Is that it?
Could be.
I don't know. I'm seeing some stuff here, but yeah, I mean, like, it's good that people are out here like trying to raise awareness and make some noise. I don't know if it necessarily, you know, is gonna be the final answer, but like, you know, that EA spouse thing that happened, like, what was that? That was like 10 years ago at least now, mm-hmm. right? But that brought awareness, and like that was the first time I remember people really talking about it in the media and stuff, and yeah, it was a big deal. So I think, yeah, just talking about this stuff is probably the first step, but yeah, the logistics of actually pulling it off, I don't know. Like I feel like we've said this before, but like if you actually looked at how many hours all these people work on a game, and if you actually said, okay, what if we paid these people what, like, for all their extra time, and you add all that up, like, it would be insane. Like, yeah, it would be absolutely insane how much it would cost to make a game.
Well, and I mean, you look now at the rise of the indie, right? And how Unity and Unreal going free has basically just caused game explosions. I mean, don't even look at Steam anymore. There's like 40 games coming out a day.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if all those teams had to unionize, or all, like, or all the people on those teams were in, had to be in a union. Like, I guarantee all those people are putting in tons of time because they want to, because they're just making their small little passion project or whatever. But I mean, once you get into the game industry legitimately and get in one of these unions, a lot of those little like passion projects just won't be able to exist, I would think. I mean, not that that's, I actually would like that better because then there's less competition, but, but yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's such a hard thing to go down. Like, you'd really need almost like a small test bed somewhere, but I don't know if you can just do that.
Yeah.
Like, is there anything in the, isn't there like a big thing, in the TV and film where like you can have non-union people, and then that's like a big faux pas, and then the union gets pissed off at you, stuff like that?
Yeah, well, it causes problems, like especially if anybody involved in the production is union, and you try to hire somebody who's non-union, I think that's where the problem really mm-hmm. comes in.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm not that well versed in it. I just, you know, it does seem interesting that it kind of works for the movie industry, and I don't know that it's like directly comparable. Like, what about just tech stuff in general? Because I feel like this is across Silicon Valley, like tech yeah, sure. startups yeah. and stuff. Like, this is a problem.
I don't think the union stuff applies to like everyone in film, does it?
No, certain, not actors, obviously, but well, I guess they do have their own Screen Actors Guild or whatever. But
I don't know if it protects any rights for them or anything like that.
I mean, I'm sure it must, but like, yeah, it's mainly the crew members that you're talking about. Like, directors have their exactly. own guild, like writers yeah. have their own guild, but the people who are actually on set, you know, working the long hours would be the
well, crew. That aren't getting paid insane amounts.
Yeah. But yeah, I think because it's both creative and technology, it's like, it's a, I don't know, that just makes it so much more complex, but.
Well, and the market now is just so, who knows where it is. I mean, like, how do you even know how much money you're going to make, if any?
Yeah.
And then you add the complexity of dealing with overtime costs and all that stuff, like overruns. you'd be seeing companies fold all over the place, I bet. In which case, you're even less jobs. So it's like a big double-edged sword.
So I'm still not sure why the Telltale, getting back to the original story, why the Telltale Games was such like a big story in terms of other studio closings. Was it mostly the perception that they were doing well because they were releasing so much stuff?
I think it was because they literally like shut the door in one day and and had so many employees and no severance.
Yeah. It definitely caught people off guard. It's not like they did like one round of layoffs and another round of layoffs. It was like they tried to keep everybody there right to the last minute. And then,
And they're like, they had projects on the go and they didn't get canceled.
Right.
Like, so when I was at Bedlam, we had three projects with Atari. And I think we were like around 120 people at the time. And Atari just canceled all three of those projects on the same day. So I think they floated everyone for like 2 or 3 days and then just said, like, we can't. Like, there's no way we're going to. And they were all like licensed Dungeons and Dragons type crap, right? So there's no way they can find a publisher to come in and take over that stuff. They own it. So, like, obviously in that situation, and I got severance in that case. So obviously they had enough kind of hanging around that they were able to do something. But I mean, it's not quite the same situation. It's not like you have a publisher come in and just cancel everything you're working on and all of a sudden the money's just not there. Like, it seemed like they were actively looking to keep the boat afloat and literally had nothing in the bank, which I think is probably one of the reasons like the workers aren't protected in that situation.
Yeah.
Sounds like they just weren't good business people in general.
Yeah, but I mean, it is interesting too because you got the flip side of that where you've got fans who are now like, I want this game finished. I really like The Walking Dead. What the hell? I'm ready to pay for it.
Sure, of course.
And so they're upset. And now I think they announced that another studio is taking over the finishing The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I think it's actually like one of the original creators spun off and started his own studio, and he's doing it.
Yeah, I think it's Robert Kirkman's studio. He's like the creator of Walking Dead.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds right. Yeah.
But he, well, but so then, but that brings up the whole other issue where it's like, well, I think they put out a statement saying like, oh, we're looking forward to working with the original developers on this, but it's unclear what that means. Like, I don't think they're giving these people their jobs back. Like, maybe they might have some overlap or some collaboration, but you know, so obviously people are like, well, wait a minute, you can afford to pay this other team to finish the game, but not the original developers. Like, it doesn't make sense. And as somebody who, you know, worked on the game, I can only assume that they would be pretty ticked off. Like, you obviously want your work to get out there.
Yeah.
But then to think that somebody else gets to finish it instead of you, like, I don't.
Yeah, well, why not? What? Yeah, why not lay off like the 200 people on the other projects and just keep the Walking Dead team around or whatever? You know, like, why do they have to let go? Everyone, it really is weird. It's quite a weird situation now that someone's picking it up.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess that's. I mean, it certainly has. You know, it's got people talking, but as we've mentioned, there have been a lot of other closures this year.
Yeah, and in general, the topic is very complex and hard to figure out what the actual path forward is in the whole union versus non-union thing.
Yeah, so I don't know. Game Workers Unite is the name of the organization that's been, and they've been putting out statements about the whole Telltale thing and trying to kind of, as I said, raise awareness. So, I mean, if you are in the industry and you haven't looked these guys up, maybe you want to check out their website. I don't know what else they have to offer right this minute, but they're trying to organize something. So, okay. Should we get into some reviews?
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're going to kick it off with Guacamelee 2. As we mentioned, well, I guess we didn't say it's only out for PS4 currently.
And Steam, no?
And Steam. Other platforms are probably coming. I don't think they've officially announced anything other than they did confirm Switch, right?
I think they did.
Let me just double check.
Let's double check that.
Well, they did just release Guacamelee 1 on the Switch. So it is definitely.
Yeah, I think they announced it's coming for other platforms. I don't know if they confirmed which ones, but.
Yeah. So, but we played on the PlayStation 4.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, full disclosure. Yeah. We know some people at the company. Huck City used to work at the company.
We got to save our $25.
Yes, we got
codes from Graham, nice enough to supply us some codes. So.
Yes. So that was a nice perk. But what did you guys think of Guacamelee 2?
Go ahead, Frank. Kick it off.
Well, I loved the first Guacamelee game. I was hoping Graham would be on the show so we could definitively come to an agreement on whether we can get rid of the term Metroidvania with regards to Guacamelee or Metroid-inspired, if he would take a stance. To me, it's probably the best Metroid-inspired game other than Metroid. I think what it brings to the table is its unique combat system, which I find very fun, and how it robustly designs scenarios around that combat system. And I love the first one. The second one, a lot of the times with sequels, I find they try to do too much. They start adding systems and, you know, changing the game that people loved. And what I love about Guac 2 is it's more of the same, but like completely rethought design elements. So I'm not relearning a new game. I'm learning new situations or getting some new abilities. Specifically, I'd say where Guac 2 expands upon it is the chicken and all the powers the chicken has, right?
Well, the chicken had no powers in the first game.
Correct. So like they've added a whole suite of stuff to the chicken, which makes like playing as the chicken even more fun than it was in the first one, and all these new set of challenges that come with chicken powers on top of Juan's like old powers in the first. So the combat system wasn't broken. No need to fix it. They've expanded upon it with the chicken, and the result is a really fun game. I wanted to keep playing it all the time. The combat's amazing. In terms of challenge, I felt like it was a little harder than the first. I went back and played the first after this. That just shows how much I wasn't sick of the formula of the game. It was still fun after playing Guac 2 that I went back and beat or platinumed Guac 1 again. If anything, I would say there's even more clever design in this one in terms of adding environmental elements and puzzles and platforming. They've added, you know, these kind of permadeath spikes and moving objects that you're navigating these platforming puzzles, I would call them, that like the imagination for how many scenarios they come up with is actually pretty impressive to me. Having had to design puzzles and platforming sections, it is not easy to do. So I think they came up with a lot of variety out of a few mechanics they have in the game. So I don't know. I love the game. I think I liked it more than the first one. There was only two rooms in terms of going for a platinum that I wanted to kill someone. Maybe one, just one room I wanted to kill someone.
Is it the one that killed all the conveyor belts?
The chicken sliding one where it's like really insane, like phasing in and out of sliding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one, I was very angry.
That's kind of like
Graham
extended
know about stuff. That. But other than that, I thought the difficulty level was perfect. I was at a great challenge level without being frustrated. And I just find the combat in that game super fun. I don't know if everyone else does, but that's why I love that game. So I guess they expanded on the skill tree. Before, you would just kind of buy a few skills in the game. Now there's a bunch of different sections. That was okay. It was kind of basically the same to me in terms of buying skills. trying to
Did
think.
Did the first
is there
one
any other...
have a skill tree?
No, but like when you would go to the like the checkpoints, there would be a shop yes. there where you could upgrade certain
yeah,
things.
Right.
And pay
okay.
For
yeah.
it with coins the same way.
Yeah, that's right.
So
I didn't think. There
yeah,
was one.
I loved it. The bosses were pretty cool. I guess in terms of story, is it better than the first? I don't know. I kind of like the simplicity of the first one, but I think the comedy in the second one more in terms of the three, kind of strange, I don't know what you'd even call them, like the cactus and
the enemies, the bosses.
Chicken. Yeah. Like the main enemies
the
that you
characters.
Fight are pretty unique and funny. So yeah, I would highly recommend it to everyone. It's probably in my top five, if not number one so far for games of the year for me. It's between that and God of War.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I worked on this game for a little bit. The first game. So I played that game absolutely a ton while I was testing it. So for me, the start of this game actually... It was amazing how quickly I got right back into it. Still really enjoyed it. But the intro is basically like a rehash of the opening for the first game. And the first time I played through that, since I had played that part probably like, I don't know, 300 hours from Guac 1, I was like, oh no, they're not just going to redo everything from Guac 1. But they didn't. It was great. So my first initial impression was kind of negative just because of that. And I think I was just kind of overwhelmed with all of the previous baggage I had.
Well, I was going to say these Metroid inspired games, like the pretty common thing to a sequel is you take away all the powers that you had from the first game. And it's always very like, it just, kind of random, and it's like, oh, why did I lose all my powers? That's kind of stupid. And in this, I thought it was kind of clever because they kind of had it like evil has been vanquished, and yeah. now he's just kind of become like washed up and, you know, hasn't kept in shape and all yeah. that kind of stuff. So I thought it kind of, at least there was a kind of a funny
got the pot belly
reason
going.
For yeah. it, and it kind of worked.
Well, I think the story too, I forgot to mention, there's a lot of comedy out of the multiverse stuff, like the, what do they call it? Is it just the Guacamelee multiverse or something? I can't remember. But,
yeah, I can't remember.
You know, going to like a bad dude's version.
Oh yeah, all the little homages.
Yeah, like all those little interludes and jokes with the multiverse. They all worked for me pretty much. I thought they were really funny.
Yeah, the Street Fighter 2 one was probably my favorite of all those. Mm-hmm. Or Street Fighter? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Yeah,
with the car.
Yeah, the car. Yeah,
and. There's also a little hidden bonus level that kind of talks about all the meme issues they had from the first game, which was a big issue in the first game post-release. So that was kind of funny to see. I laughed a lot during that little room where they post a whole bunch of comments from people online that are acting like people in the game, which is quite hilarious. Like Frank said, the combat for Juan is basically unchanged. And I think that was the best decision they could have made for this game because his mechanics are just so tight from the first game that there was nothing they needed to change. And the chicken powers all fit perfectly in the Guacamelee combat arena. For me, I found that especially on hard, some of the encounters that you run into were quite difficult, like the little battle arena type things.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that the bosses were not nearly as challenging as the first game. I think the first game, now I think there might have been a patch to lower the difficulty of the bosses in the original, but they used to be very, very difficult. And I was sort of expecting that sort of level of difficulty again. And I really didn't even have a problem. Actually, I would say that the end boss is quite easy relative to some of the other bosses in the game, which I was slightly disappointed with, but I mean, it was still fun to play. And like Frank was saying also, like, I had a great time with this game, and I was just happy to see that one of the mechanics I prototyped when we were prototyping Guac 2 when I still worked there, like, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, that like slow time mechanic where the enemy, there's certain enemies that have this like time warp bubble around them that slows time. I prototyped that, but as a skill for Juan to use. So it was nice to see that they still were able to use that thing we tried out all those years ago. So that was nice.
NDA breach.
Not now, it's released. It's in the public sphere now. What else? Yeah, I think there was definitely some frustrating points with the sort of like end game platinum trophy type stuff. This extremely hard platforming puzzles that Frank was talking about were quite vicious and damaging to your psyche.
I genuinely, it was only one room for me that pushed me to the brink.
Yeah.
Of furious anger. Yes. Other than that, I just happen to be really fucking good at these games.
How can you beat it so slow?
The first one three times because I didn't know you could enter a code to play it on hard.
No, I still whooped your ass for the times, both times.
Oh, please.
I like finished it 10 hours ahead of you.
Like in terms of total time?
Total time, yeah.
Oh, I leave the game running. I'm like, oh, okay. I probably fell asleep at some
point. Sure he does.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true, Sean. Well, let's see how Sean did. Sean's the real test of how hard this game is.
Well, I beat it, so that's something.
Whoa.
The platforming stuff is definitely the hardest. I think... For me, the stuff, and I didn't platinum it, obviously, and I there were certainly some optional, like anytime you come across sort of optional rooms where you know, like, oh, there's a treasure chest or something that you probably don't need, but let's try it a few times. I would give it a whirl, and sometimes I would eventually get it, and sometimes I would be like, okay, moving on. But like the thing that I think really, the most frustrating thing for me was the rooms with the phasing in and out with the, while it's going across the screen, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where it's like, you have to kind of, as you're moving across, switch between realms. And, that was tricky.
It was
pretty tricky, but you know,
but you did it.
I did it. Yeah. I don't think I actually finished the final boss of the first, Guacamelee.
It was tricky.
Recall. So, although I do wonder too, cause I was playing it on the Vita. And sometimes the controls on that are not as good.
Sean, this game was made for the Switch. You should just wait to play it on that.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but yeah, I thought it was great. And I mean, like the humor in it, I think, I mean, I know the whole thing about the memes and stuff, people complained about that, whatever. Like to me, I was actually curious if there was a LucasArts Monkey Island influence here, because I got that vibe a lot from the way that the characters would kind of talk to each other and then kind of have the long pause and sometimes just like look at each other. And like, I don't know, there was just something about that comedy that really worked for me and seemed reminiscent of those games. But
I felt sometimes it goes a little over the top with that stuff, but I agree when it is on, it's really funny.
Yeah. And I thought visually, like it's one of those games as well where I was like, well, what are they going to do to upgrade the visuals of something like this? Because it's like a 2D kind of cartoony thing. But I just thought it was so colorful and it really did take it to another level. And
well, one thing I want to mention, which actually reading some reviews rarely got mentioned, is that they put in a whole new lighting model so that it actually everything looks like it's 3D. So if you look closely, there's like shadows being cast and all this like lighting on the character models and everything, and it looks incredible. Especially I'm sure, Frank, I'm sure you noticed going back to the first one. Like how much of a visual upgrade this one is, and just like it just adds so much depth to the backgrounds and to the characters on screen and everything, and it's really never mentioned. And that's like, you know, you're not doing traditional lighting calculations like you would in 3D with that kind of stuff, because it's just a 2D sprite you're doing. So you got to add all this other normal map crap on there to do that. But it looks really good.
I noticed it mostly. Obviously, there's like a Jade Temple, an Obsidian Temple, all these things. And the walls are basically kind of crystal-like with some 3D nature to the bricks in them. So
yeah,
that definitely added to the look of the game. It was a little more dense in the backgrounds, I'd say, now that I think about it, but I mean, I just like the art style in general in both games, so it's more of the same stuff I like, I guess. I do enjoy that they basically came up with new areas. Like, some were revisited, like the main hub areas, but I think in terms of helping people and doing quests, I thought it was done better in the second one, where they're kind of defined rooms on a map that you can that have a check mark on them, whether you've completed them or not. I preferred that to the kind of random encounters throughout the world.
Yeah.
What else?
I feel like they had that in the first one too, though.
There was some for like the tool tree, I think, maybe. And like when you would go to get the orbs.
Yeah.
That was there.
Yes. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I did like all the chicken temple stuff. That stuff was funny.
Yep.
The prisons, going to hell, all that stuff. Like, very creative. Awesome game.
The
I played through
toilet travel, fast yep. travel stuff.
Always.
Yeah, there's a few things I was missing though. Like, I wish they used actually the chicken powers more. I felt like they were actually a little underutilized in the game. And also, one feature that they had in the first game, which I missed, it probably wasn't a big miss for many people, but they had these like chicken mazes in the original game where the camera was like really zoomed in and you were almost like trying to find the path out. I don't know. It just was a nice little thing to break up some of the combat. And there were some, I guess, chicken parts where you're kind of doing that, but not really in the same scope that they were in the original Guacamelee.
Yeah. I thought the music was great.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah, they nailed the soundtrack again for this game.
And, yeah, I mean, I just... there's something about this game, like, most of the Metroid kind of clones and things that are out there, you're usually using ranged weapons and shooting guns and stuff. Although maybe, I guess, there's been a lot in the last few years, and not all of them are like that anymore. But there's just, I guess, the... you know, the beat 'em up kind of brawler thing really sets this apart. And I think it's pretty unique, even though it's obviously drawing from other games. And yeah, I mean, story wise, it was, I couldn't really tell you what was happening, but it was mostly about the humor, I think.
Yeah, I found the story was a little difficult to follow as well. As far as it seemed like you're just kind of going across the map and then, you know, coming back occasionally.
Yeah.
They're trying to get like the Triforce of Guacamole. You stop them and then of course they get it and you have to beat them at the end. It's just kind of.
Yeah. Straightforward.
Simple.
Yeah, man.
The enemies, they added a few new enemy types and they kept mostly old ones around. And I thought the new enemy types were all, they all fit right in sort of with the Guacamole universe, and you know, you probably couldn't even tell which ones were new and which ones were old. They all kind of fit right in. Let's see what else.
Yeah, well, I mean, just the fact that I played this game, played it again on hard to get a platinum, and then played the original again to get a platinum on hard, like, there's something fundamentally fantastic about the mechanics of the game if
yeah.
you want to keep playing it that much.
Yeah, it definitely nails that, like, just one more checkpoint sort of mentality. I know I stayed up till like 2-3 in the morning a couple nights in a row because of that. And you know, you just like look at the clock, you're like, oh, I could play for another 5 minutes and then yeah. an hour goes by.
Yeah, definitely. I guess we can mention also they had co-op, like they added co-op to the original game when they re-released it with the Super Turbo
Championship Edition,
whatever. Yeah. Which you worked on that version, right?
A little bit. Yeah.
So it's there out of the box this time around. And I did play a little bit of it with Kieran. And I'm curious, actually, that's something I'm not sure if it scales in terms of enemies. It seemed like it was the same. But certainly the platforming stuff is way harder
I think
co-op. So
if I recall from, if it's the same for this as it is. Oh, and in this one that you can now do four players. Super
right.
Turbo is only two.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If I recall, they didn't scale the enemy stuff, but yeah, the platforming is definitely more challenging, especially with the time swap type stuff.
Yeah, like I don't even know how you could do some of it. Like definitely you have to put one of the characters into like a floaty ball thing or whatever.
Have them sign out.
Yeah, or that, yeah. But it is actually like because of the brawler stuff, it's a lot of fun to do that stuff cooperatively. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice little feature. Not really necessary, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah. They had one new move they added called the Eagle Grab,
mm-hmm.
where they have these little, I guess, eagle icons kind of scattered in the level. And as one gets close to them, it's almost like you can redirect yourself out of them depending on your angle relative to where they are. And I had one hang up with this mechanic, and it was that the button to initiate the eagle flight or whatever they called it was the triangle on PlayStation 4, which was also the grab button. So if you mistimed that and did it a little early, Juan would get locked into this like grab animation, and then you would not be able to hit triangle again to initiate the eagle flight thing until it was too late. And so on a lot of the more difficult platforming that used that, I found that I was trying to anticipate it a little too early instead of waiting for the actual, like they have this little like white arrow that appears when you can do it. And right. I found I was trying to anticipate that a little too early.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about it, like, I don't know what other button they'd put it on, because basically every button is used for something and you don't want to be dodging or anything else. So I think it's probably a difficult something to ask Graham about how they tried to.
Definitely got to take him to task on that one. did they not borrow that mechanic from something? Was that an Ori or something? Like, it seemed really familiar.
I think
familiar.
It's an Ori. Yeah.
Is it?
I think so.
Frank?
Ori special.
There was a similar thing where you could grab bullets and dash off them in Ori, but...
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, something about it felt familiar, but I couldn't place it.
I also liked how the... Going back to the skill tree, how as you use things, it unlocks different branches of the skill tree. Like, specifically with, like, some of the slam moves and, like, the wrestling-type moves.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that sort of skill tree where you actually have to do something to unlock it. It's not just, like, play the game.
Yeah, although I don't know. I think those ones were the last ones I actually unlocked. Like, I didn't...
Yeah,
I mean,
me too.
They're not that super useful. They're kind of cool, but they're not, like...
Yeah, they don't feel like they do so much more damage that it's worth your time to do them.
Yeah.
I just, like... My favorite one is you throw them into the wall, and then you just keep punching them up in the air. And they just get stuck bouncing off the wall and coming back to you. It's a it's a master technique.
Nice. Yeah. I think that's about it for me. I mean, it's pretty great. Certainly, if you like the first one, you're going to like this one a lot. And if you like any Metroid-type games, it's one of the better, Metroid-inspired games.
I say it's the best.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with Frank there. All right, should we do...
And Polygon just released a list, I think, of top 12...
Yeah, I was going to say, I think...
Metroidvania games, and it was number 4 or 3, I think.
Oh, yeah?
And excellent. I think Axiom Verge is number 1. And I
really?
Pretty much say, I'd say that's fucking bullshit.
Yeah, like, I didn't really... I couldn't get into
Fuck
Axiom
you.
Verge.
I do like Axiom Verge quite a bit, but what else was on the list? I think Hollow Knight was above it, and I'll talk about that a bit, but I have not really been able to get that much into that game. And what was number 2? I think it was Steam World Dig 2.
Yeah, what the fuck?
I haven't played yet, but... I mean, it was a weird list, because there's lots of other games, like stuff like Shadow Complex wasn't on there. Like, they called it Top 12 Indie... Metroidvania games. I think Shadow Complex is kind of indie, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they got bought by Epic after they made that game.
Yeah. But I'm sure there's lots of other ones that probably should have been on there, but Guacamelee, near the top, I agree with, for sure.
It is number 1.
Okay. So, yeah, let's give a star rating then.
Frank, what are you giving it?
I'm giving it a 5 out of 5.
Ooh, I think I think I'll also give it a 5 out of 5.
I will give it 5 chickens out of 5 chickens.
Oh, polo. 5 polos.
Yes, indeed.
Great game. Great game all around.
Waiting to play it on the Switch. I'm sure it will be even better on the Switch.
Don't. They don't have achievements. They don't have all awesome functionalities. Go buy it on a good system that supported indies for at least a decade.
All right. So let's get into Spider-Man. Sony exclusive.
Marvel's Spider-Man is the title.
So, Frank, Marvel's here, before Spider-Man. We get into
if you're
it,
looking for trophies or trophy guides, you won't find them under S. You'll find them under M.
I was just going to say,
Spider-Man.
I know you're big on your order and your collection. Where does this go, S or M?
Wherever PlayStation S-N-M. Puts it, bud. I don't have cases anymore. It's digital.
Pure
I don't have to worry about it.
Beautiful. That's what I like to hear.
So developed by Insomniac.
Just to be clear, I do sort by genre within folders on my...
Your PlayStation?
Yeah.
I sort by library games and non-library games.
And also outside of genre. Like, Guac would go on... Both Guacs would go under Friends. I have a folder for games made by Friends.
Good call.
If Graham wasn't my friend, it would go in my folder titled Metroid Ripoffs. And then I've got a folder for PS Plus trash. All those trash games I get on PS Plus.
Why do you even download those?
Why not? You never know.
I don't know how I feel about these folders, Frank. This does not sound like you're something you would normally abide by.
Oh, I abide by it. Trust me.
It's his new shelf.
All right, so Spider-Man, I haven't beat the game. I'm probably going to say 40% through it. Not that... I'm sure I could have played a bit more, to be honest, but it wasn't pulling me in like I was hoping it would. But let me throw it over to you guys, since you did complete the game. What did you think of Spider-Man?
Well, I felt like they really nailed the sort of like Spider-Man universe feel. I feel like Peter Parker and Spider-Man were both very true to what my vision of what Spider-Man is. And so they really captured that. They nailed swinging through the city. They nailed a lot of his mechanics, I felt, were really good. The combat is basically, you know, Arkham Asylum meets Assassin's Creed. And the gameplay in general is Arkham Asylum. Or I should say just Arkham City, essentially, because that's what Arkham City is. But yeah, I also found that it definitely had flaws. For me, the biggest flaws were in just the variety in the overworld of the stuff you have to do. And probably, you're probably not there yet, Dwight, but in sort of in the later game, the overworld almost becomes a chore to navigate because there's all these dudes trying to shoot at you and stuff. And there's like just so many combat missions going on all the time and people trying to hit you. And it just became kind of frustrating. I mean, they have fast travel open by that point, so you can fast travel around to get around it. But yeah, overall, I thought the bosses left a little to be desired, though I thought they did a good job with them. They were still fun to play. Just I maybe expecting a little more variety, perhaps a little more in depth, specialty gameplay or whatever. And yeah, that's all I can think about right now. Let me consult my notes. But Frank, why don't you jump in?
I really liked it as well. I agree in terms of Spider-Man. All of that stuff was excellent. Specifically story-wise, I thought the overarching story with Otto Octavius and Spider-Man was extremely strong.
Yeah.
Like movie level strong of a comic book story. And I loved playing the game. I actually liked the boss fights. I liked how they ramped up towards the end, like kind of fighting multiple bad guys at once. I thought that was really neat. For me, I think they're trying to do something story-wise, like expanding and like on other characters in the universe, specifically MJ and Miles Morales, and like how they're incorporated into the story. And they have playable missions with them, trying to like get this idea that Spider-Man needs help as well. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But if you're going to do those, they should be the best missions in the game if you're trying to enforce their value in Spider-Man's life. And they're the opposite. They are so boring.
Yep.
It's specifically towards the end. The longer you go, the worse they get.
Yeah, I found I was just trying to sprint through as fast as possible.
Oh, yeah. And like it's poor. I'm assuming they tried the stealth with different levels of AI, and they eventually got to a point where people literally wanted to burn through them. So they are basically holding your hand through these kind of stealth sections. And there's not even really any unique moments. I'd say the highlight is using Mary Jane to like pick people for Spider-Man to pick off. Mm-hmm. But even then, I think you're accentuating the value of Spider-Man and to some extent Mary Jane in that situation. And that's why it's the best. But the last one with Mary Jane, I was just kind of scouring an apartment for like half an hour, and I'm almost at the end of the game, and I'm like, just let me finish this game.
Yeah.
I don't want to do a blanket search of every item in an apartment. It's just brings the game to a grinding halt. And even the last Miles mission where you're kind of avoiding Rhino, that was like really confusing and just trial and error and not really a lot of fun. So to the point where they eventually just tell you what to do. So
yeah.
I think those, while that's a noble attempt and it does add to the story, having those side missions not be fun is a big failure on the game's part. Now, thankfully they don't last too long, but unfortunately the ones at the end left the worst taste in my mouth. So I'm remembering them the more.
Yeah. I think they were obviously trying for a little variety in the gameplay because the gameplay is all pretty much the same. You're just fighting Spider-Man. And even the gadgets and stuff you get don't really change how you approach a fight ever.
And by the end, Mary Jane finally gets the stun gun that's like the most powerful weapon of all time. Spider-Man's electric webs don't even stun enemies permanently. The stun gun is amazing.
Yeah.
And again, when you elevate your story in video games, that affects everything. Everything has to be elevated, and flaws and nitpicks become even worse. And I love the last boss. The game looks amazing.
Yes.
I like the music swinging. I really enjoyed the side missions with variety. So Harry's kind of enclosures that tended to get a little wackier and like a little more thought out missions. Whereas when they added a whole new set of 10 crimes to every area by the end, I'm like, I'm done with these. Like,
yeah, there's way too many crime missions.
And one thing I liked about the game is that the city wasn't too big. Kind of like Arkham Knight, it was a manageable size. It wasn't just about, like, let's make the biggest city we can make for the sake of making it big. They picked a really nice size for the city. And design-wise, I was amazed. Like, I didn't know how much fun swinging would be or how much fun it would be at like 10 hours into the game, but the way they space buildings and have short and tall buildings kind of interwoven, it makes you use other mechanics like the slingshot and point jump and all this stuff. And I found it was more about, you know, using combinations of moves or adapting as the height of the buildings changed, made that super interesting to the point where I used fast travel like very little compared to something like GTA where I use fast travel all the time.
Yeah, me too.
It was very similar to like Second Son for me, which had amazing traversal mechanics with variety that I just wanted to do. And I would rather do that than suffer the load time of the fast travel. And it's just, I'll take that fun advantage for that small time. The other collectibles.
Just to jump in on the locomotion stuff. I found that It did have that sort of like infamous stickiness, I like to call it, where you kind of like jump and then you sort of like magnetize to the nearest ledge, which I found sometimes frustrating if you're trying to go slow and specifically, you know, get to a specific spot. But I found that you could, you basically had to forget about moving on your own and just do the like web pull type move to get to where you wanted to go. Otherwise you just go way too frustrated trying to like walk off of something. That's just,
if you're trying to get into like wall crawl mode or walking on something, that was definitely, that's the kind of grossest part of the game.
Yeah.
Mechanics wise. But like you said, I ended up just swinging and point jumping everywhere. It's very rare that I needed to. And those kind of weaknesses design-wise get revealed a bit. Like you, they introduce like the idea of hanging in the stealth sections and going up and down. And I remember that being showcased in the videos at E3. And
I never used it.
You don't use it to the point where every time you have to use it in catered scenarios, they have to remind you how to do it. So
yeah,
the stuff like that reveals a game's own flaws. When you have to tell people how to do things that you told them at the beginning of the game, that means they probably, in playtesting, no one remembered how to do it by the time they got there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of holding your hand through those sections. But I did think it had some cool camera close-up moments. The one under the truck was really cool. A few other ones. But the actual QuickTime events, I liked. I know people don't like those sometimes. I had fun with them.
Yep.
To the point where I think they had a very good association with the scenario, like whether you're going to shoot. Like I really like the ones where you have to shoot webs really quick with the triggers.
I found some of them were not super intuitive. Like in particular, like ones where you had to kind of like pull the thumbstick into like a certain area to aim at something. Like maybe I just haven't done it enough.
Yeah, by the end, it's like it's always do that and hit R1.
Yeah.
You're like kind of getting ready.
Yeah, they don't like pick a random button or anything for you to do. So once you kind of understand that's what they're doing, it's just kind of, it's natural.
Yeah.
I love the different suits. I actually changed suits a lot, although I did not experiment very much with suit powers. I kind of use the same one the entire game.
I know I like the suits too because I actually was playing this a bit with my kids because my son's really big into Spider-Man, although he has really no exposure to him at all except for this game. And it was nice because I can just kind of swing around the city and sort of do the non-violent research missions or look for the backpacks or look for the landmarks with him. And he gets to like kind of see you swinging around and without having to expose them to any of the violent, more violent aspects of the game. So I liked that there was those extra things to do. Now, unfortunately, I ate all those up so quick that then at the end of the game, all I have is combat, which was a little disappointing. Another thing we didn't talk about yet is in the sort of like Dr. Octavius's lab, there's like some mini games with the, you have like a spectrometer and sort of like an electrical wiring diagram type mini games you need to do. And I actually really enjoyed those aspects of the game, those little puzzle things that sort of just change the pace. And I actually wish that they did something like that for the gadget skill tree. So how the gadget skill tree work right now is basically like you just get enough tokens or whatever you needed and then you just buy it. I thought it would have been neat if for the first time you unlock a new device, there was some sort of, you know, Peter Parker is actually making this thing mini game where you have to do some sort of like engineering type thing, sort of similar to the electrical diagram to develop it. I thought that would have been really cool and also broken it up a little bit. But
I really liked the spectrometer ones. The circuit ones were okay, but it was almost like
they
only had one solution.
Yeah.
Like, except for the last two where there's multiple outputs, it was like, okay,
yeah,
it's pretty hard to fail these. It's just playing with the voltages a bit, but
yeah,
I did get sick of those a bit cause they start throwing them into main missions as well. Specifically one where you have to do like four in a row. And I'm like, this might be a bit much.
Yeah. I think overall, as far as scattering out the missions, I actually preferred how Arkham City did it, where you kind of have, you know, missions related to characters. And then you can, you know, if you're at 25% of the story, you can do like 25% of the side mission. And then it kind of progresses as you go. So you can't just like clear off everything in, you know, your first couple hours of the game. And I know they kind of did this by hiding certain side missions until you reach certain story points, but there's no real through line for those side missions. They're all just kind of throwaway one-off.
And they're all
things.
Just kind of the same based on enemies that you encounter. There's the, they start as kingpin hideouts, then they're criminal hideouts, then they're Sable hideouts.
Yeah.
And you know,
and the,
I kind of had my fill of those during the game.
And they're just escalating number of waves of guys.
Yeah.
It's not like there's anything interesting about them that changes.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I guess I like the game quite a bit, but I certainly have criticisms. Maybe it didn't click with me as much as it did with you guys. Like, I think for me, a lot of it is just comes down to it feels like Arkham, but not as good. And I think, you know, maybe there's some things it does better or different. Like, you know, certainly Spider-Man moves a lot faster and the combat's a lot quicker pace than it is in Arkham. And the story, I think, getting across the idea of, like, the many facets of Peter Parker and having to, like, you know, being stretched in a million different directions or whatever. Like, that's pretty well done in the game, I think. But when it comes to the specific gameplay stuff, I just couldn't, like, especially early on, I wanted it to feel like Arkham, and it was, like, fighting against that. And, you know, I found that... trying to swing and stuff like that. Like I got the hang of it, but I still feel like when I traverse the city, I'm hitting walls and things, and it doesn't flow the way that I want it to flow.
Oh, it flows, baby. You're just not there yet.
Maybe.
Flows like butter.
Yeah, you do get like speed boosts and web swinging speed things as you level up.
Right.
But yeah, I sort of agree with Dwyer in that I still really like the swinging, but there are certain aspects of it that are a little janky. I think we already touched on that too.
Wrong. Fake news.
The combat too for me was a little bit like I never, you know, there's something about the Arkham games. Maybe they're a little bit more simple in terms of what you're generally doing in a combat situation, but there's a real flow to that. And with Spider-Man, I just kind of kept feeling like I couldn't get into a flow. I was constantly being broken up by something. And maybe just because there's too many different options of types of attacks and things he can do. I mean, it's not like you don't have like that simple sort of attack comes in, you counter it. Like there's a little bit of that. But then, you know, there's the like aerial combat, and then there's the like sort of ranged combat stuff for people who are shooting at you. And, yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it, but I also was starting to, like, I haven't done any of the base token things yet. Like,
you're not missing really anything.
And it's just like, I don't really feel like that's fun. Whereas like the Arkham games, I see a group of enemies, I'll just drop in and fight because it's fun. Whereas this, I'm like kind of trying to avoid any combat I don't have to do, which is not a good sign, but maybe I'm not there yet. Maybe it hasn't clicked for me. I'm not sure.
This guy fucking hates this game. Holy
shit.
Sounds
like it.
I did like all the suits. I did play with a lot of the different powers of the ones that I had. And like
you were punk rock Spider-Man. I can tell right now.
I did do that. I think my favorite outfit was the Scarlet Spider one. I like the mods. I haven't really taken advantage of the actual gadgets that much yet. I mean, I know they have specific uses, but in terms of combat, I'm not switching between it much or anything.
Yeah, I'm the same with that. Like, I would find I'd be doing combat, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I have all these gadgets. And I would spawn, like, four spider droids at once that are auto-combatting and, like, just spam them all a bunch and then just go back to regular combat. They don't fit in that well within the flow of combat, where Batman was pretty good with that, where you, like, a quick tap, I think, with the right trigger, he would throw three batarangs, and that would all kind of factor into the combo system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even think I used those spider drones once, now that I think about it. I was more of the sticky web type guy, where I'd try to stick guys onto the walls.
Yeah. I use my sticky webs.
I did like exploring the city. I mean, finding the backpacks and just simple things like that, and the landmarks. I like that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I like the photography of the landmarks too, like how you could do really unique pictures from the sense that you're Spider-Man and you're falling in through the air and time's kind of slowing down and you can get these really interesting pictures.
Yeah, that stuff's really good.
I liked how you didn't even really have to be looking at the thing to get it to count. You just like take a picture of the side wall.
Sure.
And you get that check mark.
this might be like a hot take here.
Oh.
But
shit.
The open world nature of the city, I actually felt like the Lego Marvel games feel more alive and like there's a little more to explore than this game. Like I do enjoy it in this game.
It's a cold take.
But
ice cold.
I don't know. Like, it's just weird. Like, you know, you just, the people you pass by are just kind of random people just sitting on a bench or like, I don't know. It doesn't feel alive and there's not a lot of people you're interacting with. And a lot of the missions, the sort of side missions that pop up as you're going through the city just started to feel really repetitive.
Like, there's a full subway system. You got trains going above ground, below ground, cars all over the place.
I never went into the subway system.
You're on acid, Dwight.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, and maybe it's unfair too. Obviously, the Lego games, there's a lot less required in terms of visuals and stuff to present a city. But yeah, I don't know. Just, I guess I was expecting a little more from that, but it's still fun to. That's still probably my favorite thing about the game.
This might be a 3-star.
It might be less.
Well, it might be, but. It
might be 2.5.
I think it's trending in the 75% to 80% range for me right now. But I, you know, obviously can't give a star rating. And it sounds, actually, you guys were talking about boss fights and stuff. Where I am in the game right now, I feel like I've only done like 2 maybe or 3. One was like barely even a boss fight. But
Well, I would say my one complaint is the stuff they showed at E3 kind of ruined the story for the game. Like, that thing they show happens very late in the game. And I don't want to say what it is necessarily, but yeah. I knew it was coming the whole time. And that's another thing. With the villains, you know who they're going to be, even though they're kind of, the story's playing it up like they're good guys in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think it actually works in the case of Otto Octavius, because you kind of see his transformation. Again, story-wise, that is the best thing in the game to me. And I think it culminates in an amazing way. And having like an older character, like I think he's 63, as like a villain that you're friends with, that you see kind of transform. I mean, like a movie can't take the time to do that a game does. So like having the time spread out, even though I think it's like a small short period of time in the game, but it feels longer because you're playing in between.
Yeah,
that worked so well for me.
On the story aspect, I felt like the we already talked about the Miles aspect and the MJ aspect. I felt both of those story wise, not including the gameplay, mm-hmm. really also kind of fell flat to me. I don't know. I guess I was expecting more of a rapport between Spider-Man and MJ. It kind of felt forced, although at like this point in the story, because it's like 10 years after he became Spider-Man, you know, they should have been dating for like a whole bunch of time leading up to the story. And it just felt like it didn't feel, if it was going to be awkward, it didn't feel awkward enough. And if it was going to be friendly, it didn't feel friendly enough. It was kind of in this weird gray area where I wasn't really convinced of their relationship, but
I thought it was kind of good. I thought like Peter's frustration and like, he's kind of in a weird spot with her, and I thought that all played out and was kind of interesting. Even the Miles story stuff, while I didn't like the gameplay, the moments with his father and stuff like that resonated emotionally with
good.
Me.
Yeah.
So story-wise, I like that. It was really the gameplay that brought me down for them.
Yeah. Well, that was definitely bad. Or I shouldn't say bad. It was just a little boring.
Yeah, I mean, you guys...
If that's your goal, to like show the value of those characters in Spider-Man's universe, which maybe it isn't, maybe I'm putting that on it. Maybe it was just about story, interactive story. I don't know. But somehow find a way to make those even more fun or as fun as Spider-Man stuff. Like, you're just kind of enforcing that they're the least fun part about Spider-Man rather than what I think they're trying to achieve, which is to show the value of those characters.
Well, you guys are, you know, saying that those segments were some of the least interesting or least fun parts, but there's also like Peter Parker story things where you're kind of just walking through buildings, talking to people, and that stuff kind of felt like it dragged a bit to me too. So I don't know. It
is
weird.
That fades a bit by the end of the game, I'd say.
Yeah.
It kind of just gets transferred onto MJ and Miles by the end.
Well, that's good. Good to hear. But yeah, I mean, it is weird. Like, again, where I am in the game, it feels like every time I go to the next story point, it kind of is just go into a building, talk to some people, maybe kill some random thugs.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, okay, so that isn't that interesting. A lot of the repetitive crime missions and other things are not super compelling. But there have been stretches of the game where I felt like the story was really strong and I kept wanting to, you know, play through to the next part and see what happens next. But I guess maybe I'm just in a bit of a lull right now.
Well, there wasn't, there definitely wasn't that much stuff compelling to do. Like, I don't know. I found it weird where you'd finish a mission and then Spider-Man would be like, oh, I guess I better swing around town for a bit. Yeah, and then, like, literally the next mission pops up at, like, 1 minute. You don't have really, like, there's nothing really.
I think you have to do a side mission.
You have to do something,
cases.
I believe. I don't think so. If it's just finding a backpack or something.
I really don't think so. I recall just, like, leaving it there for a bit and then the thing popping up.
I don't know. I can't say definitively.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when you look at some of those side missions and stuff, though, and again, you were comparing it to the Arkham,
yeah,
like how they're kind of, a lot of them were based on a specific villain. They'd have a storyline that you play through. And it, like, I kind of thought that's where they're going, but then, like, for instance, the Black Cat thing, like, you're just, like, finding, like,
pictures.
Yeah, like, it's not, maybe it does lead somewhere, but.
No, I think she's part of the DLC coming out, if I recall, which I did. I bought the deluxe edition to get the DLC for whatever, $10 off. So I still will go back and play that. But yeah, I was a little disappointed in those side missions. I was hoping that each kind of boss. Now, I think I didn't finish the Tombstone side quest, but I don't think that was really that. I think that was basically just like boss base battles again. You're just killing a bunch of guys.
It was pretty good. I liked it too. Yeah, there was a pretty good boss fight with Tombstone.
Oh, okay. I'll have to go back and finish that up.
Okay, I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, it's solid. It looks very nice. It feels like Spider-Man, and I think probably the best Spider-Man game to date. Unless you're a huge fan of that original PlayStation one.
I would agree with that statement, that it's the best one.
But, not masterpiece quality, not game of the year quality for me, for sure.
I'd say that's a pretty good assessment. Frank?
Star ratings?
I think I'd give it a 4 out of 5. But I still had a really fun time with it, so I would recommend it, although it's not like this, you know, 5 out of 5 glory piece, but I still had a lot of fun swinging around, and I would recommend anyone who has, like, any fandom for Spider-Man to pick it up and give it a go.
I would give it a solid 4.5.
Ooh. All right.
It might have sounded worse the way I was talking, but I was kind of focusing on the downsides of the game. There is a lot of upside.
Yeah.
It just, maybe by the end of the game, I would say halfway through the game, it would have been a 9 or like almost a 5 for me.
Yeah, same.
But the tail was like, I was kind of doing too much of the same stuff.
Yeah. For me, it's just like really the enemy quest or whatever, the like enemy
crimes.
There's just too many. It just really drags down everything.
And you don't have to do that, but I'm obviously playing from like a full completion perspective.
Yeah, but you're constantly being harassed about them. Yeah. Which is, I mean, so even if I'm ignoring them, I'm constantly being harassed about them all the time. And it is a little frustrating to constantly be getting badgered.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on and talk about some other stuff we played. Anybody have any other big games they want to talk about?
I do. I played a little bit of Detroit. I don't think we talked about it. So I don't know how far I am. I didn't get it that far, but I was really enjoying it. Of course, big David Cage fan in general of those games, those style of games. So, I mean, if you liked Heavy Rain or Indigo Prophecy or Beyond Two Souls, I would highly recommend this game. It really does a lot and it looks incredible. And I am planning on going back and playing it, but unfortunately the lineup at the library for this stupid game is huge. I was 100th in line after getting it my first time.
Really?
Yeah. So there's a lot of people that are wanting to play this at the old Mississauga library.
Hmm.
So I'm patiently waiting.
Stop telling people your secret, man. That's why everybody.
No, it's all getting out. It's all right. I got a better secret. I get my card and my wife's card on it. So I got the double bill.
Nice.
Soon, once Ethan's old enough, I'll be getting his card on it too.
So, but just like, does it do anything different or is it basically the same kind of choice based narrative type thing?
Yeah, pretty much the same. I think they kind of toned down the like stick mechanics to do certain actions. You know, you don't have to like do this crazy maneuver anymore to pick up something. It's basically just a little more simplified. But yeah, it's basically the same thing. I think the control scheme's a little more straightforward, more third person. Because I believe, I don't know if I remember this correctly, but I thought in Heavy Rain it was like a little more difficult to just navigate the world in general. But yeah, I don't know. It's basically another Heavy Rain, Beyond Two Souls style game, just with a different storyline. So I haven't got far enough where any of the storylines are really panning out. But from what I played, I kind of got, I think there's three main characters that you're kind of following along. And I got to play a couple sections of each of those. And it was really interesting, like how they were telling the story. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't played anymore.
Do you control a robot or something like that?
Yeah,
the
three people you control are all robots. Okay. They're all androids. So it's one guy's kind of like a servant. The other, well, I guess one guy's a detective. And the other guy is, the other girl is also like motherly type servant as well. So, and each of them have like really interesting backstories and you can, it does kind of like play on you because you can tell they're emotionless, but the situations they're in are causing an emotional response in you, what's happening to them. So it's really interesting, sort of like mind fuck of what's happening to them and they're not reacting and how they're like kind of breaking out of their shell or whatever kind of idea. It was really interesting, I found. I could do one more. I played Octopath Traveler.
Nice.
Which I really enjoy. The only thing I don't like about it is it seems like there's no real throughput story for the whole thing. It's kind of like you have eight people who you can choose to get or not get, although basically they kind of level cap it where it's in your best interest to get everybody. So I believe each character has four or five sort of like chapters in their personal story. And then you kind of travel around the world and pick them up as you go. So like I started off with one guy and he started on the right side of the map. And then I completed his chapter one. And then his chapter two was on the complete other side of the map. So I basically had to walk through everyone in order to get to him, his chapter two. And his chapter two is also gated at like level 25. So I was like when I finished his chapter one, I was at like level 4. So obviously you need to play a lot of missions and whatnot to level up to be able to actually progress each story.
Right.
And as you recruit guys, the level kind of increase. The level cap increases for certain guys. So overall, like the gameplay, the fighting mechanics, the battle mechanics are incredible. They're really good. They have this mechanic where...
Sorry, is this Octopath?
Yeah, Octopath. Yeah. Okay. So they have this mechanic where you basically, when you face people, they have a bunch of weaknesses. And if you expose their weaknesses, they have sort of shields that can be broken based on those weaknesses. So you have to kind of root through your weapons. Each character has one or two different type of weapon attacks. So like bow, axe, dagger, sword, magic, that sort of stuff. So you can affect the enemies with whichever one you choose. So it's sort of like this trial and error, trying to figure out what the weakness is. And then once you determine what it is, it never goes away. But it's really neat. And you have this like overcharge thing that you can do extra attacks per turn. And yeah, overall, it's just really fun. There's like this nice little strategy layer that you're constantly using each battle. And I haven't got sick of it yet. And I've played probably 6 hours, 7 hours of it. And I'm really enjoying it. So, yeah, I'll kick it over to one of you guys.
6 hours, 7 hours of 80?
I don't know.
Something like that?
That sounds like it's a long game. Yeah. I don't know. I've heard conflicting reports like it's short, but from what I could tell, it's really long. So, I don't know.
Short by JRPG
I guess
standards.
So. Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Frank, what do you got?
Not much, honestly. A lot of time in Spider-Man, a lot of time in Guac, replaying Guac 1. The other thing I platinumed was Donut County.
I've been hearing about
so,
this game.
It's a small little indie game, basically. I'd say the premise is you're a sinkhole that grows by consuming things, kind of like a Katamari in a way, where you start being able to swallow bigger and bigger items in the city, trying to like play out little different scenarios and eat the entire map with a sinkhole that's kind of moving along the ground and growing. It was pretty good. I had fun with it. It's short, but the story stuff, there's like kind of dialogue with the people from the county and this kind of like phone chat mechanic built into the game for the people who live in the city. I really didn't give a shit about that. It was pretty boring, actually. But the actual little game itself was fun. I mean, it's be wary. It's very short, but a neat little game that I had fun platinuming. And I guess I'll also mention Overcooked 2, which I finally got. And a few, my friends and I have been playing some weekends, and it is still a lot of fun. If anything, I'd say it's easier than the first one, like getting 3 stars. We tend to get them a lot easier than we used to. We might just be better at the game too. I'm not sure, but
have you played
Overcooked
solo at all?
One? No, I've never played solo.
Okay.
I've played Overcooked 1 and 2 and love and highly recommend both.
Yeah, I played a bit of Overcooked 2. Not necessarily in the best situation. So when the game came out, is it still only on the Switch or is it out on other platforms now?
Oh, I bought it on PS4. It's okay. On everything, I think.
So, well, when it came out on the Switch, it was in the summer sometime, and we were on vacation.
I'm pretty sure it was like unilateral release on like August 16th or something like that, yeah.
Okay, well, so I happened to have the Switch with me. We were on vacation, and so I downloaded it, and then Alicia and I played a bit of it together once the kids were asleep. But we played on the Switch with just the Switch and the two controllers, and we were just like squinting at the screen and just leaning forward, like trying to like,
oh,
it was
this game was made for the Switch.
Well, in this case, a big screen would have really helped, but we still had a lot of fun with it, and I look forward to going back to it. But I didn't notice too much different about part two. Like, is there anything that they've added that you're aware of?
No, not really. I mean, I guess they added online play, but I've only played locally. The recipes are different, I guess, which is kind of fun. Like, you're kind of learning more and new recipes, but it's pretty much the same game, which I like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for the local co-op is definitely amazing. So if you have some friends and you're able to do that, then pick it up. So I'll mention, you know, we're on the Metroidvania kick here, talking about Metroidvanias, even though Frank really hates the term. So I played Hollow Knight. This is actually my second time trying to get into it because I bought it on Steam when it originally came out. Amazing reviews across the board. And I didn't, like, I barely touched it. So, I mean, it's not like I really gave it a chance the first time around, but then when it came out on the Switch, picked it up again, started trying to get into it. And I was really excited because, again, fantastic reviews, Metroid-inspired gameplay. And I don't know what it is. I cannot... I think the big thing for me is the map system. There is a map, but it doesn't really show you... It's not like a very specific room by room or like... It's just sort of like a general map, almost like a hand-drawn thing of like with some symbols on it that might represent something. And you have to kind of try to understand, oh, there is that statue in that one room. That must be that picture. And like it just... It's not super easy to navigate. And then on top of that, it's not that easy to, like, it's pretty challenging fighting enemies as well, at least early on. And I don't know. I've heard that it is somewhat inspired by Dark Souls. I don't know if that's the element of the game that I'm not digging that's kind of pushing me away. But, yeah, there's something about it that's just not, it doesn't have that, you know, that Metroid kind of pull of like I gotta keep playing and I'm in the zone. Like I just find it every time I sit down and try to play it, I get frustrated and then I forget about it for a while, go back, try again, and I'm like, I forget where I am, I don't know where I'm trying to go.
So Alex from work is really into this game, and from his description of it, I think I would be in the same boat as you, because he was saying it's like really heavy on the exploration aspect.
Okay.
Of like the Metroidvania, and it seems like a game like if you put it down for too long, you will forget.
Yes.
You know, like what you're doing, what everything means, where everything is, because it doesn't kind of hold your hand enough. And I mean, that would be a dagger for me. I cannot hold that enough of that stuff in my brain to make it worthwhile to play this, a game like this. And I don't have the time to put in that much time to it.
Yeah, I guess like. I like the idea of being forced to explore a bit more, but I think that combined with the difficulty of combat where it's like you kind of have started to figure out you're getting down somewhere, but there's not enough save points and you die and it's like, fuck, now I'm back here again and like I got to find my way all the way back to where I was. I don't know. Those two things combined seem to make it a bit more frustrating than I was hoping for. But I don't know. Some people seem to love it. It's great on the Switch. So,
speaking of the Switch, I also played Dead Cells, which is another Metroidvania. I played it ever just super briefly. I didn't really have that much time, but I didn't really get the hype actually around this game. It was good. Like the gameplay was nice. The animations were super fluid. It looks like this weird kind of like, I don't know. The art style is kind of a little weird, actually, to tell you the truth. I don't even know how to describe it per se. It's almost like cel shaded, but not quite. I don't know.
Well, it's pixel art for sure. So it's like, I don't know, a very robust pixel art, I would call it.
I don't think it's pixel art actually. I think it's actually 3D models that they then apply like a shader to,
or they're, yeah, their shader
that
makes
it look like pixel art.
Yeah.
It's almost like faux pixel art. But that's why the animations look so fluid. Because it's all this like crazy 3D. I think there was a big article on Gamasutra about it. But yeah, I just didn't really, this game, it didn't really capture me. Like I thought it was going to be like Rogue Legacy, where you kind of like do a run and then you die and you have to buy something. But it's kind of reverse. You do a run and you collect souls and then you have to get to a certain location and then you can spend your souls. And I actually just found that a little too, I guess, intense. Like, a little too...
punishing?
Maybe not punishing, but just, like, stressful.
Yeah.
And I just didn't really want to be feeling that stress. Like, if I'm sitting down for 20 minutes, I don't want to have to, like, force myself to keep playing so that I don't feel like I'm wasting that 20 minutes of time, which I think is why I liked Rogue Legacy. Like, I can sit down, and I no matter how long I play for, I'll come up with something on the at the back end when I die, kind of thing.
I'll just say I did play that as well, and I put quite a bit of time into it before what would have come along. Was that before God of War? No. I don't know. I can't remember what it was.
It came out at the same time as Overcooked 2. So
oh, no. Guac 2 pushed it out of the way. So up until that, I was kind of playing Dead Cells primarily and really enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, I heard about it. I'm curious. We'll probably pick it up at some point. But, you know, the roguelike thing just always... I mean, Rogue Legacy, from what I played, was probably the most fun that I've had with the roguelike, but like, I don't know. I've listened to some podcasts where people were talking about playing Dead Cells, and it's just, it seemed like, you know, just they've played that, the first level over and over again so many times. And I, that doesn't seem that fun where it's like you, every time you die, you're starting a whole new run. I don't know.
Is Hollow Knight? Oh, Hollow Knight's not roguelike. It's a Metroidvania.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess, I don't know. Maybe I just haven't found that the hook into those games yet. But I would like to try it. I could quickly mention also I played Dandera, which...
never even heard of that game.
It is a Metroidvania, I guess. what's interesting about it is the way that you move in the game is very unique. And I think it's... I've seen a lot of mixed reviews, I guess. I mean, generally positive, but like the traversal thing seems to really be a problem for a lot of people. And I think on a Switch, you can do either with a D-pad or the touch screen, but I think it's also out for iOS, possibly Android. And there you only use the touch screen. But the idea is that you are on the floor, and then you can aim yourself in a direction and jump to another platform either on the ceiling or on a wall, and you can't actually ever run or walk in the game. All you do is jump back and forth between platforms on the ceiling and on walls and jump all over the room in that way. And it does take a bit of getting used to once you kind of get the hang of it. I found that it was actually pretty fun and pretty unique. But once you start having enemies in the mix and stuff too, that like doing boss fights like that can really be tricky. And from what I've heard, there's a point where the difficulty really spikes and it gets super hard. I don't think I've hit that yet, but I have been enjoying it up to that point. And it's got kind of an interesting, I don't know, story and mythology to it as well. So I think it's worth checking out if you're into that kind of thing.
Just watching a video right now. It's all just like this grappling hook thing.
Yeah, well, it's not a grappling hook. It's just that that's just an indicator of where you jump to.
Weird. I've never even heard of this game at all.
No,
this is the climate we're living in, where games come out that you never even hear about.
Yeah, it's true.
It's disgusting.
okay. Anything else for? I mean, I got a couple other things, but.
Yeah, I got a couple I can just run through quickly. I want to give a shout out to our friends at Compulsion Games. They released We Happy Few, and I wanted to put some time into this to actually talk about it in depth, but I was only putting enough time to get through the sort of like the opening tutorial area, and I want to go back, but I wanted to, you know, just say, you know, congrats on the launch. And I don't know if either of you guys got a chance to try it at all, but I originally kickstarted it when it was originally on the Kickstarter. And so I just, I played it when it first dropped, and it's completely different now. I wouldn't say completely different, but it's definitely, they definitely changed a lot since I originally played it back in the early beta.
Yeah. I mean, I want to try it. I kind of regret not buying it when it was in early access, because at the time I thought, well, I'd rather wait for the completed game.
Yeah.
But suddenly the price jumped quite a bit. Like, I think it was like $30 originally or something, and then it became an $80 game. I was like, what happened?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, if the reviews...
Gearbox happened.
If the reviews had been, like, super amazing, I probably would have bought it. But now I'll just kind of wait and see.
Yeah, wait for a price drop.
Yeah.
I just got Valkyria Chronicles 4 from the library, and I've played probably 3 or 4 missions, and I'm really enjoying it. It's basically the original Valkyria Chronicles that I really enjoyed, and basically just a new cast of characters and a few new mechanics, and it's really great. So if anyone out there played the original Valkyria Chronicles and wants a little more, I highly, highly recommend this game. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far, and I'm going to keep playing it. I've been playing a bunch of Madden 19, the new Madden.
Yeah.
I really like it. Probably more than last year's version. There are like little nuances to get used to with new blocking mechanics and things like that. But overall, really liking it. I haven't had a chance to dive into this second season of the Long Shot, which is like their story mode. But I want to eventually. I also played the NHL 19 beta. I know the full game's out now, but I haven't had a chance to pick it up. And the new skating mechanics are actually really, really good. And the game just felt like you're not skating in concrete boots anymore. You're actually on ice, which is always a good thing. And so I actually am really interested in trying out the full game and seeing if they screwed it up yet by all their gameplay, whatever, adjustments. And quickly, I picked up in the PSN sale, I picked up the Uncharted Collection for PS4 and Killzone Shadowfall and played a bit of those games, and those games still hold up so well. They're excellent games. That's it for me.
Did I ever mention Mario Tennis on the last one? I can't remember when we last recorded.
I don't know. I also played that a bit.
I think it was mentioned, but...
Yeah, I just want to reiterate, it's brutal. They have these dialogue moments and loading screens in between retrying matches and doing things in like this campaign. And it just made me not want to play the game at all. They added some interesting mechanics with power shots and aimed shots, which I liked in the beta, but the quest mode is brutal and the load times are insane.
I didn't notice the load times for me personally.
I wonder if it's because I have it on a micro SD card and I have a shitty micro SD card.
It might be.
It was brutal. I was like wanting to kill people.
I have it on a micro SD as well, but I don't think it's... I never noticed a big issue with it.
You crazy, man.
Ethan loves the game.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's playing it all the time.
Has anybody picked up the new Mario Party at all?
No.
Hells no.
Kind of tempted.
I probably will borrow it from the library and adjust or assess if I should buy the full game or not.
Yeah, I've heard it's pretty good.
Never been into Mario Party, ever.
Really?
No, you know, I'll take Sonic Shuffle any day of the
Well, I haven't played a Mario Party game in quite a while, but I remember the first few enjoying them quite a bit. I'll just mention a couple of quick things. So I played this indie game called Minit. M-I-N-I-T. And it's sort of an 8-bit style Game Boy black and white graphics Zelda clone in a way. But the idea behind it is that you have the gameplay loops happen in 1-minute spans. So you have a minute to do something and then you die and you reset back at your last save point. And
was this made by the guys that made 30 Second Hero or whatever it was called?
Because
it's like the exact
know.
Same gameplay mechanic.
Is it really?
Very similar.
I mean, it seems like it may have also been a little bit inspired by Majora's Mask, I guess, like just at a much smaller increment. I believe it was published by Devolver, but it's... I don't know. It's just a bunch of people's names. JW, Kitty, Jukio, and Dom. I don't know if that's
maybe.
The company name or if that's just...
Okay, maybe it's not them then.
But
oh, no, it was called Half Minute Hero. That's what the game was called. I'm thinking.
Okay. I have heard of that.
Yeah.
But, but I mean, the thing is, it's, you know, it's solving puzzles in 1 minute increments. So it's like, you know, you go out and explore a little bit and you see how far you can get and you see something you need to do. And it's like, oh, okay, I died, but I got to go back and try that again. And then, you know, certain things you're kind of racing against time to get to a certain place. And you can eventually move your save points so that you have like a new home base that you're starting out
from. So once you solve a puzzle in that minute, it's unlocked from
then
on?
Yeah, like there's a lot of, you know, trying to get a certain item. Once you've got that item, you have it at your home base all the time. Huh. And yeah, it was pretty fun actually. I mean, it's the kind of game where I kind of, you know, I guess it clearly was made with a small team, but it's just kind of, I don't know, it seems like it's a pretty creative, working within certain limitations, but I don't know, it just seemed like a creative building on those limitations. And I guess I'll mention the new WarioWare game, although I don't have that much to say about it. I'm surprised, like, usually every Nintendo system, there's, like, a WarioWare game that's, like, a launch title for it, because it's always an easy way for them to put together a bunch of mini games that show off the new technology, and, you know, it's obviously not super complex or deep. But then they didn't do it for the Switch this year, or last year, I guess. But, like, they put out, the latest one is on the 3DS. It's called WarioWare Gold, and it's more of like a greatest hits of all the previous games put together, and not much more to say other than that. Like, it's pretty fun still. It has been a little while since I've played a WarioWare game, but I don't know, I guess I'm a little disappointed. I like, when it was originally announced, I thought it was all new stuff, and found out later that it was not all new stuff. So, but it's I don't know, I like these little mini games. I guess they kind of did the Nintendo or NES Remix games as well, that are sort of in that zone of the WarioWare games, but I like the wackiness of the WarioWare. I think they're working on a new Wario platformer as well, which I look forward to. But
speaking of NES style games and Metroidvanias, have you tried The Messenger?
No, I've heard of it. I know what it is.
Okay.
Would like to check
it out. Yeah, actually, I know the one guy who made on it, who made it, Martin Brouard, and I've been meaning to check it out. I just, you know, it's only on Switch, and I'm waiting for it to come to other consoles.
Isn't it on Steam as well? No?
Possibly. I want trophies or achievements. So.
All right.
I'll wait till that day.
Steam does have achievements, right?
I'm not invested in those.
Okay.
They mean nothing.
Yeah, I'll definitely be picking it up for the Switch.
Yeah. Seem like something right up your alley.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, well, it is Metroid inspired, but also Ninja Gaiden, I guess, would be the big influence there.
But they have a really cool mechanic of like switching from 8-bit to 16-bit graphics. It's pretty cool, yeah.
Nice.
I might just buy it on Steam to support them, but definitely not on Switch. I bought Hollow Knight on Switch, never played it. Well, let me give you the track record for this. So Hollow Knight, I bought on Steam when it was on sale, played it for maybe 10 minutes. Bought Hollow Knight on Switch when it was on sale, played it for 10 minutes. Now I finally bought Hollow Knight again on PS4. So I end up buying these things three times. I'm just going to wait for the PS4 or Xbox One.
It's probably your best bet. And then just buy
Rather
one.
Than spending triple the money on the game.
You're the whale. You're the new whale.
I am.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing I'll mention, I mean, I finished the first Tomb Raider, started on Rise of the Tomb Raider. Kind of just wanted to keep playing that, but then, you know, the stupid Spider-Man game came out and I had to play that. But I think I'll probably go back to Rise of the Tomb Raider, and I do have Shadow waiting for me as well. So I'm really enjoying the series. I don't know what took me so long to...
Is your Shadow still wrapped, Sean?
I don't think so.
Because it's on sale already this weekend for like 25% off on the PlayStation Store.
Yeah, I saw that. I think I still paid less for it because I pre-ordered it.
Pre-ordered it? Okay.
So I'm good.
But I did start it, and I was really liking it. I just wanted to finish Spider-Man, so that'll be the next thing I play. Perhaps I'm debating right now if I should buy Black Ops 4, but
yeah,
which came out today. I don't know.
I still have to beat Rise of the Tomb Raider. Maybe we'll do a retro review next show.
Sounds good.
I was playing through it again, getting ready for Shadow, and then I just ran out of time.
Retro review, our second ever.
Sounds good. Not that retro, but it's all right. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it for me. Going to try and squeeze in as much of that before Red Dead comes out.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I have one more. I was listening to a podcast that's doing like a top 25 RPG countdown type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, like in the 20s or something, was Phantasy Star 4 for the Genesis, which I had actually never played before, or at least never gone very far in. And I'm hooked on this game now. I don't know what it is. There's like character switching, characters are dying off. Like there's all these neat little story things going on. There's like a little bit of space travel, not really too much. There's, you know, different locales, different weapons for each character. There's even a vehicle that can get into combat and the combat's different. There's like a nice little strategy element. I'm really enjoying the game. A little exploration here and there. And I was just happily surprised with this quite old RPG now that was actually quite, you know, ahead of its time, I think. And I was really surprised I hadn't ever actually gotten into it. So if anyone's looking for an old, you know, Genesis SNES style RPG that may have slipped through the cracks, look for that one.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I guess we can get on to some junk mail. We do have some stuff left over from the last show and some stuff we got more recently. But let's just plow through this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
GameJunkPodcast@gmail.com is where you can reach us. Do you have? You might have a better list than I do. Do you have a list ready
to go?
I
just went off the email list you sent.
Oh, okay.
And that I added to.
Well... So we'll start with this one from Reese in Tennessee. And we may have kind of already touched on this last show. I don't remember. So forgive me. Hey, Junkers, the CEO of Ubisoft was quoted as saying that there will be one more console generation. And then after that, we will be streaming, all of us. What do you all think of a future where we stream games instead of buying physical copies? And do you think it's even possible? As movie collectors, I would imagine you all also have some solid video game collections too. So do you think you would be happy to make that transition if it means having easier access to more games? Thanks for all the laughs. Long live film game ball junk. Reese.
I think we did touch on this one last time.
Yeah, but there has been some news with like Google getting into cloud streaming, Microsoft mm-hmm. announcing their xCloud streaming system. So obviously there is more of a push, especially with Google getting into it, for the cloud streaming. And I think that we're definitely going down that route, but there's just not the infrastructure to do it. I mean, PlayStation Now, as far as the last time I tried it, was still not really viable as a, you know, there was just too much input lag to really enjoy a fully streamed experience. I have not played Assassin's Creed yet, but apparently, Assassin's Creed Odyssey is the one that you can sign up for the Chrome beta or whatever it's called, right?
Yeah.
Playing your
browser.
I
think you can't sign up anymore, but they did have it for sure.
Yeah, so, and everything I heard of is that it went pretty well. So obviously, you know, the power of Google is now behind it, which is always a good sign that that's the way things are going to go.
Yeah.
And I'm not a collector, so that going all digital is where I'm at. So that has no, like getting rid of physical media has no impact on me.
Yeah, well, you know what? The one thing I will say about this, so it's kind of interesting because, you know, when you think about video games compared to movies and collecting and stuff, like one of the big complaints people have had with games is that they have not been doing a great job of preserving old games, right? Like, I mean, there has been virtual console and HD remasters of old games and stuff, but it's still like pretty hard if you want to go back, you know, more than 5 years even to to find some games. And if you want to go back further than that, like getting a working system, I don't know. It's just not something that it's not like movies where you just buy, you know, a DVD or Blu-ray of a 50-year-old movie and it's there.
Yeah.
It's a lot more complicated. So I don't know if this is going to help that or hurt that, really. I mean, it could help it in a lot of ways because you're putting everything on a level playing field, I guess, in terms of like it's all just streaming to a display, but it also means you're leaving it up to whoever the provider is to sort of choose what
to curate
you
it
have
for
access
you.
To, and that could be bad. So yeah, but I mean, it just feels like it's going to happen, right? Like everybody is doing the Netflix of something, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of no different than, you know, buying stuff digitally on your PS4 right now. I mean, when I go to the PS5, I'm going to either have to rebuy it in whatever the new form is, or I'd have to keep my PS4 around. And most likely I'm not going to do that unless they have backwards compatibility and I can just re-download it. But like even in that case, I'm still relying on Sony's servers to still host the data to download it digitally.
Yeah.
And you have to also, if you have a physical form, you have to hope that if it is backwards, well, obviously if it's backwards compatible, they need to support DVD players. There's no guarantee that DVD and Blu-ray will forever be a viable, you know, backwards compatibility format down the road if they come up with something new and improved something.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like, but it seems like it's happening, so.
It's kind of one of those things where I really don't care. If it gets there, I'll do it. If it's good enough, if not, I'll just keep going the way it is now. It really means nothing to me either way, unless there's a huge savings or value added to. I'm just worried about everything factioning off into, you know, Sony's subscription. Then I have an Xbox subscription, and each publisher has their own subscription fee, and it's now like how everyone's getting branching off from Netflix or trying to do their own thing. That feels gross to me. So I'd almost rather just buy the games I want digitally. I don't know. I don't see it being. I'll probably be dead by the time it's actually relevant. So who gives a fuck?
The world will just end either way.
Kill me.
Okay, so we got one from My Brains on Discord. Have any of you guys joined the Battle Royale hype/fad?
No.
Nope.
Too old for that shit.
I've tried Fortnite a bit. It's okay. I've tried PUBG. I like that less, I'd say. Fortnite, I at least like the construction construction element. People who are really good at that, it's kind of a unique skill and a new idea, but there's just not enough action for me. So I am about to purchase Call of Duty Black Ops 4 right now, and that has a new battle royale method, so I'm going to check that out tonight or tomorrow.
Cool. Okay, hey guys, I've been thinking of purchasing a Switch, but I'm not sold on it yet. I'm a casual PS4 player, and the last Nintendo system I owned was a GameCube. I don't have any friends that own a Switch, so I'd just be playing solo and online. What would you say to sell me on the Switch? Thanks, Kyle.
Frank, take it away, bud. Switch, do it. Your favorite.
There's only two things to sell someone on the Switch, and they're two very good things. Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. There's some really good first-party titles on it right now.
And anything else you can get anywhere else, including a Wii U. I can't think of another.
You can get Breath of the Wild on the Wii U as well.
Yeah. But, those are two amazing games that are worth owning a Switch for.
But it's the new place to go for indie games, so you definitely got to get a Switch.
Oh, my God. So angry.
I mean, I think the biggest selling point for a Nintendo system is always the first party games, and they've done a lot of re-releasing stuff from the Wii U, which I think we have a question kind of about that coming up, but there's still good, good stuff that's exclusive to the Switch. So that would be my biggest argument. Greetings, Dwai Guy, Huck City, and Embers of Knezich. Quick question. I imagine none of you are too keen on the modern retro revival wave, but what are your thoughts and predictions on Atari's attempt to bring a modern retro console to market? It's pretty shocking how many backers and money they've already generated for this project, approaching 3 million. Specs look somewhat similar to the Switch. Seems dubious there'd be any real third-party software interest. Pro controller looks like a rebadged 360. Are people simply hoping against hope, or is this an excuse to own a unique piece of future graveyard history like the Ouya? Not sure I see much point in this. Will it ever actually come out? They chose Indiegogo, which doesn't require a working prototype, rather than the Kickstarter, which leads me to believe it's just an excuse to generate capital and future interest in Atari products. P.S. Huck, I've been following the Equilibrium Systems blog and appreciate the game dev notes and milestones you've been posting. Regards, Game Junkers, Chandon.
Yeah, more posts to hopefully come soon.
So I haven't kept up with this Atari system. Has there been any updates? Because I think this question is from a few months ago.
I remember seeing some video of it on YouTube at a trade show a while ago, but since then I've heard nothing, really.
So it's called the Atari VCS?
Yeah, I don't know. Certainly not... I'd say the PlayStation Mini has, or Classic, has a lot more hype behind it right now than that Atari thing.
Yeah, I think just like the, I just don't think the games are going to stand up. Like Atari games in general. I'm sure there's some nostalgia, but I mean, I remember that, like, I never had an Atari. My cousin had one. And I don't know. I don't know anyone else that had one.
But I don't understand. So it's, it looks like an old, like it's kind of got the design of an old Atari, but they're making new games, like new modern games with it, right?
Oh, really?
Or is it also, are they also selling it as like you can play old Atari games on it? 100 plus classic Atari games preloaded. Okay, so I guess
it's close. The real price? Like 300 and...
239, it says.
Oh, and the other one.
329 with all the controllers, yeah.
Holy moly.
Estimated delivery July 2019. I mean, yeah, I don't. I honestly don't know, man. Like, I guess people are just banking on playing those old games, and, like, I can't see anybody buying this thinking, I can't wait for the new stuff they're going to do with this.
Yeah, and, I mean, those games don't. I don't think they're really going to stand up. They're pretty frustrating from what I remember.
I mean, and the thing is, there's already an Atari Flashback system. I have one downstairs, and I played it like once. So,
yeah,
it's yeah. I definitely am not buying on this one. But
no, bye.
Who knows? I mean, the Commodore 64 Mini just came out, and I don't have one of those yet. Uh-oh. So
that would be better.
But yeah, I don't know. Okay. This one is from Greg in Philly. Is Hideo Kojima the David Lynch of video games? Excited for the E3 talk. Well, that was last show. Lots of love, Greg.
Yeah, that's a carryover.
So Hideo Kojima as David Lynch. You know, it's interesting. I feel like there's other people who fit the bill more. They'd be like more indie developers, but I guess maybe that's part of being Lynch, is that you've got to be also a kind of
kooky
A-list, like blockbuster, somebody that most people have heard of.
See, I would say he's almost the opposite of David Lynch. He over-explains everything. David Lynch just kind of has visuals and, you know, you have to decipher them yourself. Hideo Kojima has like 20 minutes of just dialogue and cutscenes explaining things.
Yeah, that's true.
I defer to you guys. I was just going to say yes, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say
know,
like...
I only know Twin Peaks, really. David Lynch.
I was just going to say like guys who did like the Stanley Parable and the Beginner's Guide and like weird like little indie things like that remind me more of Lynch, but it is interesting to sort of look at well-known game developer personalities and compare them to directors. Cause
like
they're
the Journey guys, maybe. Like, yeah. How they just kind of throw it out there.
What about Johnny Blow?
Johnny Blow was where I was headed, bro.
Yeah.
But he's still not quite there. He's a little too uncool to be Lynch.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be cool to be David Lynch. I don't think anyone is as cool as David Lynch in the video game community.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he's without comparison.
Okay, so Daniel Collett says, hello, guys. In the spirit of the God of War review, one of the best aspects of the game for me is the score. It gets my blood pumping. Could you guys list your top five best gaming scores? Also, what is the game that you gave up on that has been sitting on your shelf and haunting you that you never finished? Love you guys. Thanks, Frank, for opening my eyes to Shoppers and PC Optimum points to buy games.
It's a spending event tomorrow. I have nothing I can buy, but
Tomorrow's
the day.
P.S. You should read my letter because Jerry hits on my wife on Facebook all the time while bashing for listening to Film Junk. Nice.
Oh, boy.
So
I could not name my top five music scores. You are welcome to, both of you. The game on my shelf that I haven't played and I'm really want to is probably... Breath of the Wild, I haven't finished, and I really should.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I got a score. I would say Mass Effect would probably be my top. Final Fantasy VII was memorable for me. God of War. Streets of Rage 2. You gotta love that soundtrack. And Super Metroid. Probably round out the top five. And my game is probably Final Fantasy IX. I've probably tried to beat that game 3-4 times and just cannot get through it. And I feel like I should as the resident RPG guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really have a top five scores either. And I mean, the thing is, he said score. I was thinking more like orchestral modern video game music. Like if I went back to, you know, NES or SNES era, maybe I could name some stuff, but I mean, all the Metroid games for me are pretty solid musically. I'm trying to think of something that was a more modern score that really stands out. And
I can think of a few themes, like the Uncharted theme.
Yeah.
Is good, but it's not like I know multiple tracks in the game or anything like that.
Yeah, definitely. The game that is haunting me that I should go back to and hopefully will soon is Last of Us, especially with Part 2 coming out. Got to go back and finish that.
That is a good game.
Okay. And Drizzy on Discord says, being in the industry, what are things you guys see in games that impress you? Or on the flip side, what are things you see that are easy for you to spot that breaks the immersion? Do you own any VR rigs, and is VR gaming here to stay? What about augmented reality gaming? Just to jump in quickly on the VR thing, did you guys hear about that game that just came out that's getting really good reviews?
No.
Astro Bots or something, I think it's called.
Oh, I saw that.
It's that's like, a VR game, right?
Yeah. So
yeah, for plays.
People are saying it's like the killer app for PSVR. It's finally here. I'm actually kind of excited. I've had like a bunch of VR games waiting for me that I've been wanting to go back to and just haven't, but maybe that will be the one that finally gets me to go back, play some stuff. So stuff that we see that impresses us or doesn't based on being in the industry.
For me, the impressive stuff is really like well-designed puzzles and mechanics. And just like when the balancing is right, you know, that, like kind of the stuff you completely take for granted. Pacing of games is really important that, you know, a lot of games falter on. God of War, Inside, Last of Us, games like those. Just sort of just great design and all that stuff kind of in all rolled up into one. And breaks immersion, probably just like stupid AI bugs and stuff where like you're watching a cinematic and then an AI like walks right into the camera or something like that. I don't know. I can't think of anything else really that I don't get fooled much. I know I'm playing a game.
Yeah, I guess for me, breaking immersion is something that just immediately came to mind is like, maybe this is a, I don't like, there's still games that do this for sure, but like the idea of like invisible barriers, you know, like that's just something that feels.
Or like having a small like stick you can't walk over.
Yeah, just when you're like moving around, and it happened to me recently with Arkham Origins actually, because I'm still playing that and I'm almost done, but there's like this weird part where you have to jump across a gap and the camera switches to like a side view. And it's like you keep jumping across and there's something that you hit that's like just this weird invisible barrier that makes you fall. Mm. And sometimes you get across and sometimes you don't. And it's super frustrating and it just feels so clunky. But yeah, I don't know. Just that's something. And then I guess stuff that impresses me is when you're aware of things that they're doing in a game that where they're not reusing stuff, you know what I mean? Where it's like something like Super Mario Odyssey, where it's like every level has tons of new mechanics and things that you use once or twice and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, because you know how much work has gone into each one of those things, and it's a lot of work.
They treat it like it's just a throwaway thing.
Yeah. What about you, Frank?
Impressing me is, like, a lot of things like impress me, but I guess something that has a really good story, because I think video game stories are so shitty when they're actually able to elevate story, which is very rare. That stands out. Breaking the illusion, nothing really. I think just really unfun or brutally hard sections comparatively to the rest of the game can just ruin a game for me.
I thought of one. Not having the ability to pause during a cutscene. That one breaks me right out.
Yep. He also asked about augmented reality gaming, and I guess we never really discussed that. I mean, is there anything to say there? I guess every time there's a Apple...
How many questions does Andrizzy get? Like, come on. We answer fucking 12. Let's go.
Well, I just, every time there's an Apple press conference, they seem to be plugging these augmented reality games. And I just think, like, it looks cool, but nobody's going to play this thing. Like, it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't have a VR rig, but I've obviously, like, experienced it. And I find that, I think AR and VR both have way more applications outside of gaming. I don't know. I just don't think they're really great for gaming. Like, I can't imagine using, like, I still want to try watching like Netflix or Plex or something in a VR rig so I can like blow up the TV screen as big as I want and not having to have this like physical TV in front of my face just think,
get out of fucking meat space, man, into cyberspace.
Right. That's right. That's what I'm talking about. You know, get the goggles with higher resolution. You can watch awesome movies however big you want.
Yeah.
You know, get a good pair of headphones. You're set. For your home theater. You don't have to buy the 4K every day, whatever, every year.
It's true.
You're set.
Yep.
Put the old veneer of the theater around you if you want. Do it on a beach, wherever you want. Buy a fan to blow in your face while you're watching it.
That's a cool idea.
Just wait 10 years. It's going to be enormous.
I know. Smell-o-vision. All that shit's coming.
It's going to be insanely good.
All right. Paulo on Discord says, did any of you get a gaming PC? I know there's been talk a few times.
No.
I have one, but really I don't use it for games specifically. I bought it for work. So just to keep up and not have my computer die every time I try to run it.
Yeah, I mean, this stupid thing that's given us so many issues with the podcast is technically a gaming PC, but I don't think I've ever used it other than a couple of Steam games briefly. So,
yeah, I'm not one to overclock, and although my new one has a liquid-cooled motherboard or whatever, so it's pretty you know, gaming. It's got lights and everything. It's
real. Nice.
Yeah, it's a real deal.
Okay, Stephen Carpenter, this is an older email. Asked some stuff about God of War. About, I mean, we kind of already talked about our thoughts on God of War. But he says, do you guys think other game developers are going to take notice of what Sony Santa Monica did with God of War? If another
what did they do?
Just that they made an amazing game, I guess. If another God of War game was to be made, where would you like to see it go as far as combat and game mechanics? And will it be looked back on in several years and still seen as one of the best games of all time, or are we just getting a little caught up in all the hype?
It's a very good game, I think. They borrowed a lot of elements from The Last of Us and other popular Sony hits and kind of brought it into God of War. It's a very good game. I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a like game changer in the industry as it's being made out to be in that email.
Yeah, I think, I mean, devs will definitely take notice of it, though. I mean, you always look at what's new and big in AAA. You always kind of use that as your bar and something to strive for. So people always will look at it.
Okay, well, there was an article, I don't know if anyone saw this, on CNET.com, of all places, and it was with reference to Spider-Man, and they were talking about, I've talked about this a lot on the show too, where while they were playing it, they had very familiar feelings. Open world, check. Skill tree system, check. RPG elements, check. Crafting, all this stuff, and it's basically equating to video game the video game. It was kind of their punchline, where it's just, you have to have certain things in a game nowadays. Assassin's Creed has evolved into this skill tree RPG the same way Horizon Zero Dawn has, and it's like every game is becoming the same thing almost, just maybe a slightly different camera with, you know, a hook or a world that it belongs to. So
yeah, what the hell? You don't even have to put RPG elements on the box anymore. It's just assumed.
Yeah, up? Like it's kind of, I see the point of the article, even though I still have fun with all those games. They're really good. I think they're copying those things for a reason because like they work and people like them in games, but I don't know. I don't think that all these games are that big of a revolution. Like for God of War, I thought it did story really well. And to me, its biggest accomplishment, what like we talked about in the episode, was its micro puzzles, like using the axe in all these different little places in the game to do cool, unique puzzles that made exploration really fun. And graphically, it was amazing. But I mean, all AAAs have to look good that way. So I think if anything, the game that's impressed me or was the biggest like success was Horizon Zero Dawn. Like how they designed the combat with all the different creatures in that game, like that to me was the most impressive thing I've seen in any game.
Yeah, I think with the AAA games, they all feed off of each other, certainly. When something's a big hit, like God of War, people look at it and they say, okay, what can we take from this game and apply it to our game? And they kind of all, that's why they kind of all start to feel similar. And you know,
but isn't God of War just taking, oh, look at The Last of Us. How can we make God of War like The Last of Us?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. They're all kind of, they keep playing off of each other, which is
so
why they all.
Isn't The Last of Us the thing that's the key defining gaming moment of whatever we're talking about?
I guess, but
like even Uncharted 4 borrowed heavily from The Last of Us.
But The Last of Us borrowed from Uncharted to begin with. So like, I think it's all like a, it's all a linear, you know, evolution. But yeah, like I would say, yeah, if you look at AAA games, a lot of them have a lot of similar elements, but you start looking at the indie games and it's completely different. So I think it's just a matter of when you got a big game and you need to make a certain amount of money with that big game, you're going to sort of hedge your bets by making it feel like something that already did very well. Okay, Spiderborg says, have any of you played Hyrule Warriors? If not, you should check it out on the Switch. I've been kind of obsessed with it for the past month or two. Keep on button mashing. Played this on the Wii U.
Me too. Wasn't crazy about it.
It was okay. I think multiplayer, it might have been a little more fun. But I did not get into it, really. Blake in Boston says, hello, game hunks. As an adult with a disposable income, I'm often reminded of harder times when I spent working hours upon hours on highly detailed Microsoft Paint illustrations of games I really wanted. I would lock myself in the computer room with the old trusty Gateway 2000 and paint pixel-by-pixel works of games such as Metal Gear Solid and 1080 Snowboarding. My parents, impressed with my fortitude slash stubbornness, would ultimately reward me by getting the game. Thus, my question, what was the dumbest thing you've done to get a game as a kid or an adult? Good question.
The only thing I could think of is I sold my N64 and all its games so I could get a PlayStation 2, I think. And I think like one game. And I kind of regret that now because the N64 was a really great multiplayer machine, especially at the time when I had it. And yeah, I think that's it. I can't think of anything else really.
Yeah, I guess dumbest thing is similar. It was selling or trading in all of my pristine inbox Super Nintendo games to get a PlayStation, original PlayStation. Oh, how much I regret selling those.
Yeah, the only thing I have is one summer my brother and I worked on a farm for a couple weeks. My dad kind of encouraged us to, before we had jobs or anything, and he was like, oh, you guys can earn some extra money to buy video games. And, you know, we worked pretty hard to earn not very much money, and I think after a couple of weeks I had enough to buy NBA All-Star Challenge for Game Boy. And it was kind of worth it. But yeah, I mean, back then that was the thing, is it just seemed so hard to, like, you rented games. That's all you did, right? Like, yeah. I did not own very many games. It was a lot of money to be able to afford to buy something, and you would never buy it unless you knew you were going to love it and you were going to get, like, so much out of it.
Yeah. Like NBA Challenge.
NBA All-Star Whatever. Challenge. Classic. Okay. Gil T says, I think we're getting to newer questions here now, right?
I think so, yeah.
Gil T says, I know thoughts have been expressed about piracy, but what are your thoughts about games with DRM? The whole Steam versus good old games thing, does DRM actually help? Sony finally allowed crossplay with Fortnite. What are your opinions on crossplay? Does it make consoles even less exclusive? Is there a difference between the communities of each console? I'd say in previous generations, the differences were noticeable. Xbox Live was the more hostile of the two, but now they both seem a bit safer for player interaction.
This is like me being completely out of touch with the youth of today. I don't even see why people care at all about cross-platform. Like, I don't understand why it's a big deal at all. But that's an old person talking. People
well,
seem
I
to
think
love
it
the,
makes sense.
Seem to
with,
love this feature. I'm like, I couldn't care less.
I think it makes sense going PC to console because there's a lot of people who are PC gamers. So it's kind of cool that you could be a console gamer and potentially play with a PC gamer. But I agree, like, cross-platform between consoles isn't that mind-blowing.
I guess, like, it's more, I guess, for younger people who, you know, want to play with their friends. Maybe I just don't play that much online. So, again, that's I accredit that to me being out of touch, basically, or just being old. And what was the first thing about? Oh, similarly,
DRM.
I've never pirated a game. I've never illegally acquired a game. The only thing I could think of is, like, back when on PC, when you'd have install discs, I might have installed someone else's game on my PC when I was younger. That's the closest thing I can think of to, like, illegally acquiring a game, technically. I am not into the DRM community. I don't know, or the DRM-free community. They seem to be pretty adamant about that stuff, but I know nothing about it.
Yeah, I used to pirate a lot of games, actually, especially when I was in university and had Zippo cash. But now I think the biggest thing, like, for me, is just having an ecosystem that makes it easy to install your games like Steam and not having to store them digitally on a hard drive. It just makes it so much easier. Like, it's like, I don't really care that there's DRM. There could be no DRM, and as long as they're hosting the games and making it easy for me to install, I wouldn't care. And like the good old games, they have their own little, I think it's like called GOG Galaxy or something like that. Kind of the same sort of thing. It's like your shelf, your digital shelf. So, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, they're DRM free, but I just use their GOG shelf thing. So I don't even know where the executable lives. So it could be DRM for all I know. And it would make no difference to me. So I think just having it be usable and having, you know, a nice way to search through your game list is more of the driving factor for me than DRM versus non-DRM now. But that being said, I don't really pirate games at all anymore. I haven't for a long time. So, and I don't even know with Steam, with the rise of Steam and stuff and consoles being popular, I don't even know how common pirating PC games is now. I mean, there must be some, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's convenience, as you said, is important. And I think a lot of the games have online components. So that kind of usually makes them pretty hard to pirate because of that, right? So I don't know.
It just seems like, I don't know, even 5-10 years ago, there was a lot of discussion on, you know, how do you stop people from pirating, as if there was a ton of people pirating games at the time. And now it seems like that discussion is non-existent.
Well, yeah, I think at the time, because you know, back when you could like mod that, your PlayStation or whatever.
Yeah.
And like the Dreamcast, you could just straight up copy.
Yeah.
Like, I think that must have been an issue, but I don't feel like for console stuff, I don't think it's an issue really right now. I mean,
yeah, I know Sony now has the infrastructure to just like constantly update the firmware, right?
Yeah.
And all the platforms do.
Yeah. But I guess maybe for PC, it's still an issue. I'm not sure. But I mean, again, stuff is pretty cheap on Steam during Steam sales. So
yeah.
I feel like, you know, your Steam library is going to probably have like 50 games you haven't played yet.
If not, 200.
Yeah. It seems crazy that people would be pirating stuff, but I guess maybe it's more for AAA stuff. Yeah. I don't know.
And for the cross-platform issue, I thought, I'm kind of disappointed that Sony caved.
Yeah.
I think it's nice that they have their own ecosystem. And, you know, I understand if, you know, you want to play your buddy with an Xbox in Fortnite or whatever. But, I don't know. I kind of like that they're on their own little contained units. And you're sort of like buying into their ecosystem. And you know, everything's handled by Sony. Whereas now, you know, you got Xbox people mixing with Sony people. I don't know. It really doesn't impact me at all because I never play online. But
yeah, and we all have all the consoles pretty much. So it's not as big a deal. Like, it's more for people who only have one console and want to play with their friends and they happen to have the other console. Then it's a big deal. So I get it. But yeah, it doesn't affect us too much. Okay, we got one from Doom. It's a bunch of questions here. I'm going to try and cut to the important ones. Is it bad to play on the easiest difficulty? I mean, some games make me raise the difficulty because of how bored I get from kicking ass all the time, like Oblivion. Or is there a website telling you which difficulty will give you a fun or better resistance instead of easy boredom? For instance, I was listening to Watch Out for Fireballs, the podcast, and the Resident Evil HD remake episode, the game had two difficulties, hiking or mountain climbing. They said to play it on the hardest, which I believe was mountain climbing, and they said it would be the best time. Are all games played on the hardest difficulty the most fun to play? What games do you all play and on what difficulty?
Let's just pause there.
Okay.
I would say that no. I would say there's no issue with playing on easy. And I find that some games on hard are just frustrating. Like, I remember all the Call of Duty games on the hardest difficulty were always just impossibly difficult because the AI can see you like the instant you step out of cover and have, you know, near probably 100%, if not 100% accuracy. So they just become this battle of frustration more than fun. I'm sure there are examples where the hardest difficulty is the most fun, but I think that's, I think harder difficulties are more for people who have played through and mastered all the mechanics already and then want a bigger challenge their second playthrough or so.
Mm-hmm. Mario Kart 200cc is like, and a 150cc sometimes is so annoying to play on, trying to get like 3 stars and stuff like that. I don't know, for me it just, I think Huck, yeah, the idea of, it's more for repeated plays, I find, or if you are like amazing at games, it's there for that.
Yeah, I mean, I play everything on normal. I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, to jump slightly to the side a little bit here, because I know there's always some discussion about if you play on easy, you know, are you a true gamer? Like, are you ruining the experience? I just think whatever is the most fun for you, right? Like, don't, like, if a game is really frustrating and you want to play the game and you see elements of it that are fun, try an easier difficulty. And on the flip side, if you try a game and it's super easy and it's boring, then turn it up. But like, it's hard to say like for everybody what the best option is, because everybody's different. Like
I actually play a lot of games on easy, mainly because I don't want to be overly challenged with the gameplay if I'm there mostly for the experience of the story and the gameplay mechanics in general. You know, if I'm not there to learn like all the little nuances and to maximize everything, I don't want to waste my time trying to figure all that stuff out. I'd rather just speed through the battles or whatever as quickly as I can to get to the next, you know, mechanic and story point and whatever else is going on.
Yeah, a lot of games now, like I think God of War did this and Spider-Man, if I'm not mistaken, like the easy will have a little description. It's basically like for people who want to just experience the story. And that's, I think that's fine. That makes a lot of sense. Like as a developer, I want people to get through the game.
Yeah, you want to see the content.
Yeah, so.
Especially when it's just like grindy battles constantly. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, when Sean plays all his games on easy and he kind of sucks at him, I'm like, I don't know about this guy. He's kind of a wimp. He can't really game. He's not a gamer.
Not a
I play
gamer.
Them on normal, bud. I play them on normal.
Oh, I know you've switched to easy on some of them, bro.
Maybe Cuphead. That's probably about it. So, yeah, I guess we had a few more questions about, like, platinuming games and stuff like that, and but it's all kind of the same idea. Like, I think developers do want people to get through the game, and I think people who are playing it want to get through the game. So, yeah. Are we for or against dynamic horse testes in Red Dead 2? Thanks, love the show. Spinners.
Four.
I'm definitely all for it. The more realistic, the better. Okay, we got one from Lace in
Personally,
Mississauga.
Before we go off this.
Yes?
I can't even believe they have that.
Like, what the heck? I definitely can.
So much detail.
So
that's why they have to work 100 hours a week to get horse testes in the game.
Totally worth it. Lace in Mississauga. Hello, fellow junkers. Love all your podcasts, as I have been and still am an avid listener, even when I might disagree with some of your opinions, and I understand and respect how you come about them. I have a particular question regarding your gaming habits. As I approach my mid-30s, I can't seem to play two big single-player games at the same time, which makes me miss the zeitgeist when certain games exist. Right now, I'm trying to finish Spider-Man as fast as I can before Red Dead 2 comes out. I find it difficult switching between two big games and adjusting to the differences in game mechanics and also losing focus on the story if I continue to switch back and forth. Do you guys usually take it game by game or try to play as many AAA single-player games so you could get into the conversation when these big games come out? And usually not too far from each other. A main example being Horizon and Zelda in 2017 Shadow of the Tomb Raider and Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Love the show. Please do a Game of the Year episode for 2018 in 2018, or at least by January of 2019. Thank you.
We'll do our best.
No promises.
I pretty much feel the exact same way. I was even flirting with playing Spider-Man and Shadow of the Tomb Raider at the same time, and it was just, it was a bad idea. I have to focus on one and then move to the other. The only way I can do it is if it's, you know, vastly different genres of games. So maybe like an action game and a sports game I can manage at the same time. But if it's, you know, a story-based single-player game, I need to play and just focus on one.
Yeah, I'm the same way too. I can't. I just don't have the time to be able to keep both in my brain at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I used to be bad for, like, particularly when I was working at a video game company, whatever the new game that came out and everybody was into, I'd be like, oh, I got to try that. It looks great. And then, like, a couple days later, something else comes out. And I was just wanting to try all these different games out, but I didn't get through very many of them. And I just, I don't know, I found like it was wasting a lot of money and not getting the most out of the games that I actually really enjoyed. So now if if I am enjoying a game, I try to stick with it because I don't like, I find it, a lot of games don't really hook me. So when one does, I stick with it.
Yeah. It's kind of like never changing the radio in the car. Like if you're enjoying the song, don't channel surf. Just stick with it.
Yeah.
Enjoy it while you're there and then channel surf after.
Yeah.
Well, you save money too. Like,
yeah.
Like I said, I pre-ordered Tomb Raider and it's literally 2 weeks after. I'm right ready to play Tomb Raider and it's on sale for, I could have saved like $30. So,
yeah.
Stupid.
I mean, but like,
wait till you're going to play a game before you buy it. I'm so dumb.
But I mean, what he was saying was, you know, you want to be part of the conversation about surrounding these games. So that's why. And I think with us doing a podcast, although we don't record all that often, there's a little bit of feeling like, oh, that new game came out. Maybe it would be cool to play it and talk about it. But
yeah, just stick with the game junk and you'll be like a month behind. You'll have plenty of time.
Yeah.
Month or two or three.
All right. A couple more questions here, guys. This one comes from Jesse. Dear Andrew Barry, Frankenberry, and Count Shankula, long-time listener, first-time caller, I'm a huge Nintendo head, and I am in the process of rebuying the handful of great games released on the Wii U that are now being ported over to the Switch. I've always held on to my previous Nintendo systems as well as a handful of my favorite games to be able to replay them when the mood strikes, not to mention trying to build my burgeoning retro lounge as inspired by Uncle Frankie. My question is, if everything good on the Wii U has been or is being ported, is there any point? Will it be worth the space? Should I trade it in while it's worth something at EB? What am I doing with my life? Why am I writing this at work? What is wrong with me? Any advice would be most appreciated. Sincerely, love the show and always look forward to hearing from you guys once every 16 months.
Well, Jesse, I have to say, if you really want answers to these questions, like what is wrong with me, what should I do with my life, I have to tell you, first thing right off, your blind allegiance to Nintendo is a sickness. And you're not alone. Believe me, I was there once in my life too. I've talked to many, many people who were there. Break it. Break the cycle. They are making you buy games twice that you already bought at an expensive, like insane high price. So I've just decided to shut them down. I will buy their new games on the Switch. If the old Wii U ones are ever on sale or like just $20, I'll consider it. But enough is enough. They are just gouging. First of all, they're loyal fans. The ones who bought a Wii U are getting shafted because we already bought these games once and buying it again is bullshit. So they better start pumping up some unique content soon and stop leaning on their new indie darling status. Oh my God. Nintendo is making me so angry these days.
Yeah. There are still some Wii U games that aren't being ported as far as I know, like Super Mario 3D, World? Or is it land?
World. No, land. That will be coming. Just wait. I guarantee you everything makes the port.
I would say if you already own the games and don't mind taking the time to plug in the old systems, like, don't rebuy everything. Because, you know, once the Switch goes away, you'll have to rebuy them on the next thing, unless you keep your Switch around.
Well, I guess I'm a little unclear on, like, does he have them for the Switch? Like, because he's saying he wants to keep...
Yes, he's rebuying them for the Switch.
I think he's considering buying them for the Switch and getting rid of all his old stuff.
But he says he's in the process of rebuying the games that were on the Wii U that are now being more... Okay, I understand. I thought he was rebuying stuff for the Wii U because he wanted to have them. But, yeah. I haven't been rebuying many of the things that got re-released on the Switch, even though it is tempting. I'm actually with Frank on this one. I mean, I'm surprised Frank feels this way, but yeah, it's way too expensive. Like, even like Luigi's,
it's not like they're an improved upgrade either. It's not like, wow, they look twice as good on the Switch. It's the same system in a portable case.
Yeah.
Like, the processing is almost exactly the same.
And,
oh man.
And the thing
I'm
with Nintendo,
so angry.
I don't totally trust Nintendo's online infrastructure. So, like, if it was Steam, I'd say go for it, because Steam seems to be pretty stable. You know, you're going to be able to get your games out there for quite a while still. But with Nintendo's online thing, like, especially now that they're charging people to play online, like, who knows what they could do? They could just, like, lock you out and start charging you extra money to access your old catalog. Who knows what they'll do? I don't trust them. Like Frank was saying, I don't trust them to just try to milk more money out of you, even after you rebuy stuff down the road.
So you're saying if you rebuy it digitally in particular?
Yeah, I'm a little worried with Nintendo specifically.
Yeah. I was going to say, even like they re-released Luigi's Mansion from the GameCube on the 3DS. And I was like, oh, I never played that game. Maybe I'd pick that up. But it's like, you know, full price 3DS game. And it's like, give me $10 off. Give me something. Like,
yeah.
It's brutal. And like they re-released, what's that JRPG, World
Ends
World
Ends With You. That's coming to Switch.
Yeah. And like, I was always been kind of interested in that game. And I was
that's
like,
one of Ryan's like favorite games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I might pick that one up on Switch, cause I never played it on the DS yet.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, yeah, maybe I should pick up this version on the Switch. But it's like, I don't know, $50 or $60.
Of course,
like,
it is. And it'll never go down in price.
Yeah.
Just got to say no.
Yeah.
It's the only way Nintendo's going to learn.
Okay. Scott in the UK says, hey, guys, bit of a sidestep. This isn't a question about video games, but board games. Seems to be a bit of a resurgence with board games as of late. Seventh Continent made over $7 million on Kickstarter, for example. Wondering if any of you have played any of the new wave of games since the release of Catan, and if you have any recommendations. If not, please ignore this email. Thanks for continuing to make great content.
So, I'm not really up on the board game situation. I do play board games, but I don't know what new wave would mean here. Do you think he means like Euro games, like the sort of like Victory Point?
I'm assuming, you know, that's what he means,
resource management type games?
Yeah.
Okay. If that's the case, then there's two I've played that are pretty good. One is called Puerto Rico, and the other one is called
Puerto Rico.
And the other one's called Princes of Florence. Both are pretty decent games, and those are the only two I could think of off the top of my head without knowing more what he means by new wave.
I have heard of Puerto Rico, and I think that is the kind of stuff he's talking about, but
I think they're also called like Euro games.
Yeah. A lot of them are European. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, yeah, I like board games, and I would love to be playing more of these, but just haven't really, I mean, being here in Mississauga and having the kids, it just doesn't, game nights don't happen so frequently anymore. But
nope.
I know our good buddy Jay and Roman and Dwayne and Zach and Reed, they all get together somewhat regularly to play stuff. They might have some suggestions. Frank, are you involved in those often or what?
Sometimes, yes. They usually just play Catan for the most part still.
Yeah.
And some other ones, like we play Dutch Blitz sometimes. That's more of a card game.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Love Letter, if anyone's played that. It's like a very simple, very elegantly designed, well-balanced game that I love that uses deduction. And I, the only other one I tried, it's probably old. You're probably laughing at me at home, but, Dominion I liked as well, which has a lot of variants.
Yeah. I think that one's pretty popular. The only thing I can mention, and I guess like it's kind of in this zone, it's a card game, but Alicia and I have played a lot of, Lost Cities, which is like a two player specific strategy game. And it's pretty good. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
There's also that that werewolf game. Do you guys know the one I'm talking about? It's like, there's like an app on your phone, and it like describes things, and you gotta like close your eyes. Everyone gets like a job essentially.
Oh, didn't we play that at
Alex's thing? The thing? Yeah, you would have. It's called like that. Werewolf, and I don't know something.
Isn't there one on? Like, didn't Ubisoft kind of rip that game off for VR called The Werewolf Amongst Us on
I'm not sure.
And it's a VR game.
Oh, yeah?
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
PSVR?
Like, so, someone, yeah, I just bought it on sale.
Nice.
It's like $8, I think, or something.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that, let me look it up quickly. And the other game I could say, actually, I don't know if it would count as a new wave, but if people are into Risk, there's this Risk Legacy game. It's kind of like every, I think there's only like 25 times you can play it, but each time there's something permanent that's added to the board.
Yeah.
So every time you play it, it actually changes a bit. The rule set kind of adjusts to what happened. And I've played it a little bit. I've only like 3 rounds in, but it's really neat how, you know, it adjusts as you play.
It's pretty cool.
I think there's a whole set of games. There's some that board games you literally can only play once. It's like, you change. It's like a physically changing game.
Yeah, you like destroy cards and stuff.
Yeah. Fucking shit's getting crazy, boys.
Yeah, man. If anybody has board game recommendations for us, let us know. Okay, we got one from at Focus. I'm going to be a snowflake and ask my question now. How does the crew feel about this silliness? Also, Red Dead 2, what platform do you plan on buying and why? So it's a link to a YouTube video where Kotaku editor Jason Schreier criticizes YouTubers for condemning microtransactions. I didn't watch this video, so I don't know if I can comment. I assume... refer back to our conversation about microtransactions a couple episodes ago where everybody got mad at us, maybe.
Yeah, I watched like a little bit of it. I can't recall.
Was this in the email or is this something new? Like, I don't have...
I forget where this came from.
Yeah, I forget where it came from too. It must have been in the email though.
Anyway, I don't think it's in my email that I got. Oh, unless...
It might have been on Discord actually.
Or was this in the one I sent? It might have been the one I sent. I replied.
I don't see a link to any video here, but the last one I have is that Catan question. But, anyway, vote with your wallet. You don't have to buy anything. It's always up to you. You have the power as a consumer.
I'm going with library. Probably on Xbox One.
And I'm probably PS4 for Red Dead.
I don't remember which platform I pre-ordered it on. I'll find out when it comes. Okay, last question. Jonathan in Denmark. Hey, guys. Great to see you're doing another one of these. What are some of your favorite stories in games? Games often get a bad rap for having shallow and or predictable storylines. However, I do think you can occasionally find some games with good storytelling. Are there any games in particular that you can remember really wowed you when it came to its story? Best regards, Jonathan. So, great question, because I don't think we've ever really sat down and talked about games that we thought had the best story.
Oh, I'm pretty sure we have.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But anyway, it's been a while.
Well, the thing is,
my answer is nothing. No video game story has compelled me to the point where I would equate it with any movie, even like an above average movie story.
I kind of agree with you, Frank. Like, initially, I'm like, oh, there must be lots of games. And then I start thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't know if there is. Like,
Let's say you take Uncharted or Uncharted 4. It's still not as good as the worst Indiana Jones movie, or maybe it is a bit better than Crystal Skull, but I mean, I'll take Indiana Jones story over Uncharted's.
Well, yeah, Uncharted would be near the top of my list for sure. And I think, you know, as far as blockbuster popcorn entertainment goes, I think they're among the best. I mean, characters you want to spend time with, dialogue that's enjoyable, not super deep stuff, but and they did some interesting stuff, particularly at the end of Uncharted 4, and I don't know.
You know what? I just popped in my brain, but I would actually almost say if they stuck the landing better, Inside, which has like no dialogue, but through like the environmental storytelling, you kind of know everything that's going on. And I mean, it's... I think the problem games have is they just try to put in too much stuff. So like,
that's the biggest thing for me is like just information upon information. Like RPG stories are just way too much. And I know some people love that. I'm not saying they're wrong for liking that, but for me, not interested.
Yeah. I know people say The Witcher is incredible. And I mean, they're making a Netflix show about it now. So, I know it's based on books.
Maybe Portal and Portal 2 are pretty good self-contained, simple video game stories that I enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll read off some that came to mind for me, but the funny thing is almost all of these I did not finish, and in a lot of cases did not even get that far in the game. So it's like, can I say that they're a great story? Like, if anything, it's just making the argument that a great story does not make a great game, I think. Although some of these are pretty widely acclaimed games, so... I would say the first Metal Gear Solid, it's goofy and it's convoluted, but there was something, especially at the time that it was doing, that was seemed like it was breaking new ground in terms of storytelling.
I think it was more like it felt like a movie more than any other game had before.
Yeah.
And
that was part of it for sure.
Yeah.
And that one I have finished, but the Arkham, all the Arkham games are decent. Batman Arkham Asylum in particular. Deus Ex, haven't played that much of the, like, that far through the original Deus Ex, but I remember thinking that it had some interesting ideas and stuff. Red Dead Redemption, a lot of people seem to say that has a pretty solid story.
I don't even
story.
Think no. that's that good. It's I just think people end. Just remember the ending.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't tell you anything about Red Dead Redemption's story other than the ending.
It was so boring, I skipped almost every cutscene. That's what I remember about Red Dead.
What about Mass Effect? Any of the Mass Effect games?
I mean, I like those games. I don't think the story is really, like, amazing.
I feel like you get into the characters.
Yeah, the characters are
great. Yes,
but
I agree.
Story, I don't know. Bioshock?
Meh.
Bioshock's pretty good, but it's good because there's not a lot of story, I guess. It's more of an experience.
For me, that game's more like
a character's eyes.
The world building.
Yeah,
more
yeah.
than like the actual story,
but it's up there. I agree.
Knights of the Old Republic.
I mean, they are decent at the time. I don't remember anything.
I think that game was more like just you. It was a believable Star Wars universe that you're existing in, more than that the story was great.
Yeah,
and I think it's more about your choices, so the story seems more important.
Yeah,
while you're playing it.
And I remember at the time it came out, the first Max Payne game, I thought, again, not a great story, but maybe the way it was told was kind of cool and interesting and different.
Yeah, I know people always talk about, like, Planescape Torment. It's a PC game. You're, like, dead or something. I haven't played it, but apparently that one's really good.
I think the first, all the God of Wars, except for maybe Ascension, I think have pretty good stories.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could... throw in Heavy Rain, kind of a good story, a bit.
Yeah,
Daddy,
little run on,
Daddy.
Oh yeah, everyone says Spec Ops: The Line all the time.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's like,
I guess I'll throw in Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Nice.
Wasn't actually, like, kind of funny, good story.
I feel like we should say, like, some Telltale games, but I actually don't really feel like any of those really have great stories.
Yeah, I mean, the original Walking Dead one, I think, is pretty good, but... Yeah. And I feel like there should be more indie games on the list, but nothing, literally nothing is coming to mind for me, so...
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Is that it?
Wow. I just did... I searched for, like, most compelling video game storylines ever.
Yeah.
Ranker.com, which I'd never heard of. And Final Fantasy VII is number 10, which is mind-blowing because that story is so convoluted. You have no idea what the hell is going on.
I think that people love that story just because it had, like, deaths and stuff like that. And
I guess so.
That's the one I would have gone to as the go-to that people love or defend.
Yeah, there is a cool twist how he's like a clone or whatever, which you just find you find out later. But
what about Chrono Trigger?
Yeah, I guess that story's pretty good. I kind of like
it. I don't know. We played it as a review on the game. I don't remember a fucking thing.
I didn't finish it, so. And yeah, I don't remember much about it.
Lavos comes down. Rain and Terror. You got to stop him. No? Nothing?
Not really.
That game is also more about the characters, and there's like a lot of character storylines that are more memorable than the overall like overarching plot. Skyrim's on this list. Dragon Age Origins, which I think is probably a pretty good pick. Assassin's Creed 2?
I hate Assassin's Creed stories.
I guess it's kind of like high level is interesting. Yeah. Chrono Trigger's on the list, 23. Anyways. We need to go.
It's number one.
We need to go to bed. Number one, the top one, is BioShock 1. Followed by Mass Effect 2, which I would argue is not worthy of being up there. Last of Us, number 3. Mass Effect Original, number 4. And Knights of the Old Republic, number 5. Ranker.com, the definitive ranker site.
I still like most of the Uncharted stories, too.
Yeah.
And Last of Us. Those would be the high bar for me.
Oh, yeah. I'm guessing a lot of people would say Last of Us. Okay, so I guess that's it. Thanks for the emails, guys. GameJunkPodcast@gmail.com is where you can reach us. Quickly read off some upcoming games here. I mean, I guess next week, LEGO DC Supervillains, Starlink Battle for Atlas, Battlefield 5, and Soul Calibur... Was that 6?
I think Battlefield 5 got pushed, didn't it? Or is this...
I think this is what this it got pushed to, I think. Maybe I'm behind. Then Red Dead Redemption 2, October 26th. Diablo 3 for the Switch, November 2nd.
Ooh.
Kind of. I might end up rebuying that Switch one for the third time. Because it's perfect for
Do
the
not. Why is that perfect for the Switch?
Because you love it so much. That's why.
Because you can.
It's tiny numbers and menus.
Take it on the go, Frank. Take it on the go. Grinding on the go.
Frank, can I buy you a copy for the Switch?
No.
The Walking Dead, November 6th. This is not the Telltale one. This is the other one. Ride 3, November 8th. Hitman 2. Spyro Reignited Trilogy. Fallout 76. Pokemon Let's Go. Oh, sorry. Battlefield 5, November 20th. That's what the proper release date is. Darksiders 3, November 27th.
Smash Brothers Ultimate, December, is it 4th or 5th?
7th.
7th? Fuck.
And PlayStation Classic, December 3rd. We didn't mention that that's coming out, but that's a thing. You guys think you'll pick that up or what?
Nope.
Doubtful. It's pretty expensive.
Yeah. I mean, I never had a PlayStation 1. I feel like that I could be convinced to buy one, but I don't know. Like, are there games that...
I don't know. They haven't announced the games. I'd say the Super Nintendo Classic is the most compelling collection right now.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, so yeah, I guess hopefully next show we'll be doing Red Dead. Although, who knows how long it's going to take us. Well, how long it will be before we can get together again, but how long it'll take us to get through that game. Like, does anybody know how long that game's supposed to be?
I don't know.
Nope.
It will be a long one, though, I imagine.
I think so.
Well, if we get it, if we all get it day one and then play constantly, we could probably slip in a show for December.
Is there online, like there is some kind of online component, right? Oh,
I guarantee it.
But like, is it, can you
Grand
play
Theft
through?
Auto 5 is still on like top selling lists.
Yeah.
But that shipped later, remember? It wasn't out on the launch day of the game.
Oh, yeah. Right. They're going to have something. Maybe not at launch, but they're going to have something for Red Dead if they can.
I'm just wondering if you can play through, like, campaign, essentially, like, co-op or something.
Oh.
Because I know, I think you can form a posse and stuff. And I don't know. I got to do some research on that.
Ask Chen.
Or just ask Chen. But looking forward to it anyway. So that's it. Anything else you guys want to mention?
Nope.
People can sign up for my company newsletter.
Ooh.
Join the army of three people. And
where can they do that?
On the equilibriumsystems.com. There's a little bar in the top right. On mobile phones, it's a little more difficult to find, but if you hunt long enough, you'll find it, I think.
Okay.
And yeah, that's it. Potentially some news coming down the pipe, maybe in the new year, about me needing some beta testers.
Okay.
For the Game Junk community to hop on, so I'll let everyone know through that. Got to be on the newsletter to get the news.
Cool. Frank, anything else for you?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, you can follow us on Twitter at Dirty Frank with 3 hours and Dirty, at My Angry Commute, at Film Junk. Until next time, we'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
Yeah.